What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Reunion of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth podcast. I'm your host, Kai, and joining me again today is Viz, my incredible co-host. How are you doing, Viz?
Hello, Kai. I'm pretty good. Actually on vacation this next week, so I'm a little bit more time to delve into Rebirth stuff. It's been pretty good. And I'm really, really pumped to talk all things Rebirth because there's so much to talk about, and I'm just so excited about this game now, ever since the huge blowout and showcasing of everything.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I've been good. I've just been working and trying to catch up on everything, all the information that was released recently at Tokyo Game Show. And obviously, there was a lot of stuff, and we're just going to do the best we can to kind of go through everything and hopefully we touch a little bit on, you know, as much as possible today. And we're going to probably cut the episode and do multiple episodes like on this particular theme about Rebirth and everything. So stay tuned for that. And our next episode will probably be focusing more on story and mystery. So stay tuned for that. All right, guys, so the best way to support us is to like, sub, and share the podcast. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. We do post our episodes there, obviously audio only. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. So, like Viz just said, we're going to be talking about the new Rebirth demo that was shown at TGS. We're going to try to cover everything released about the game over the past few weeks, and that's pretty much it. So let's dive into it. First of all, we're going to talk about EverCrisis. So it was released since, you know, the last episode. We haven't really talked about it at all, but I did download it and I played it a little bit. I haven't been really getting into it that much. Like I said, I've just been really busy working, but unfortunately it doesn't have controller support on mobile device, like on my iPhone. So I have like a Bluetooth controller that I have. It's a SteelSeries, I think it's a Nimbus, but it doesn't have compatibility with that, which is unfortunate. So I know recently they just announced that they're releasing a Steam version. So I'm kind of looking forward to playing it on my PC. So I'll probably download it and get more into it then, fingers crossed. But, you know, it is a gacha game and I kind of get addicted to those, like that Final Fantasy 15. Empire of War, whatever it was. I spent hundreds of dollars on that game.
Oh no.
Okay, like I shouldn't have done that. If you go back and listen to the old episodes, you will know. And then I literally had to stop and delete it because I was like, they got me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that, I am the prime suspect for these type of games, and I just have not gotten into it because I know I'm going to spend money that I don't have. So I really have to make sure that I don't do that. So no, I haven't really played it that much. Looks like everybody's been enjoying it for the most part. There's some criticisms that I saw online, but it seems to be doing well. What do you think, Viz? Have you been playing EverCrisis?
I personally have not, because I'm, unlike you, not into gacha games at all. It's just not my thing. And mobile games in general, it's just not where I want to play my games. But Dachdega is recording all the good footage, story parts and everything for me, so I can just sit down and watch it and enjoy the story, especially the first soldier, with which everything is new in there. So it's quite interesting. And also, what was it? The beach special episode or what have you?
Oh, right. Yeah, it was an event.
Yeah, an event.
A beach event or something like that.
And then there are special character episodes, I think, which are partially covering Traces of Two Paths with Tifa and Aerith anyway, and something with Cloud and how he meets Tifa. Haven't watched those yet, but I still intend to. But that's about the experience I got and will get. But others in the CCO community are enjoying it pretty much. They keep talking about it and comparing scores and builds and draws and what have you. So it's doing good. It's doing good.
So young Sephiroth was released as a character, right? So you can choose him and play as him. Is that what was recently just released?
Possibly. I don't quite follow. I personally don't really care. I just go through our channels and see what's there. If there are cool images, new announcements, I get it from there. But actively searching for announcements or getting those, it's nah.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to play it for any, you know, like story elements or anything like that. Just tie-ins to kind of help it make sense, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Like in the world, you know, of Final Fantasy VII. So I do want to play it for those specific aspects. So I'll probably pick it up once it comes to Steam and play through it and not spend any money, though. That's the thing. So it'll probably take me longer to complete it. You know what I mean? Mm. Because I'm not spending money. But anyway.
Yeah, it will also take a while for me to watch through everything because I'm not the kind of guy that just sits down for hours and watches footage, whatever. But although I could load it on my tablet and watch it on, I don't know, while cooking and stuff, but the thing is, I'd have to read all the time, so it's not quite as fitting for that situation. So I suppose I just need to make time besides everything and keep remembering to watch through it. Because there's in a stream, I don't quite remember how it was called, the stream, but somebody revealed that this hooded guy in the State of Play trailer we saw at the Rufus Parade, this unknown mysterious guy, is apparently a character from The First Soldier. Everybody, of course, jumps to the conclusion, oh, it's Glenn, even before that. Not quite sure yet, but that's also, I think, a nice tie-in, and I'm curious to see how it goes, where it leads to.
Interesting. We'll talk about a little bit about that character in a bit here as well. So, yeah, so we're going to jump in here. We're going to be talking about the Rebirth demo. So just want to shout out, thank you so much, Square Enix, for flying us down to LA. We got a chance to play the demo. I'm just kidding. No, we didn't, guys. We did not get invited to play the demo like everybody else, but that's okay.
We're not as important, that's okay. Apparently.
That's okay. Square Enix, we still love you.
Yeah.
We still love. Yeah. So we did not get to play the demo, but that's okay. We're going to be talking about the demo, and I congrats to like everybody in the community that actually did get flown down to LA to play the demo. That's like, wow, once in a lifetime opportunities. So props to you guys. And I did watch a lot of the creator videos as well.
Same.
Just getting feedback about the gameplay. And, you know, it's overall, it's been super positive, which just honestly, it just made me smile. You know what I mean? Like, I was just so happy to hear that. And just, you know, especially Baby Seal's video, you know, he's just been doing so well. And he did get a chance to play it when he posted his video. I think it was the first one that I watched.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, I got to play it and it's good. And I was like, yes, this is so great.
Kind of the same with Max Dude's video. He also was blown away by it. It was really good. Especially when he was able to jump into the water and swim over to the small island. It was so good.
Oh my God. Yeah, just that part of the video. Yeah, when he said that, he was like thinking, you know, I don't have the chocobo to be able to like swim in water. So I wish I could just, you know, get in the water and swim over there. And then he just literally goes down and you could swim over there.
Yeah.
So he was like, at that moment, he was like, wow, this is something that is just going to be so special. And I agree. And everything that, you know, we've seen so far, I don't know about you, but I'm super happy with. And I think that we're going to be super blown away. And I think that it's just the tip of the iceberg. I don't think that we've seen like even half of what there is, because if they're so confident, like showing this much, you know what I mean? I feel like there's a lot more that we haven't seen that it's going to be amazing. So anyway, so we're going to give our general thoughts here. So obviously, you know, we just talked about the general perception, I think, is that, you know, everyone's happy with what they've seen so far. I was actually super surprised that we got this much. I know that, you know, Final Fantasy 16 has kind of been released and everything has moved on since then. So I expect, you know, I should have expected that they would go this hard on Rebirth now, because obviously we get a release date, which is February 29th, 2024, which is a leap year day, which is awesome and super cool. But just, I don't know, I just felt like they gave us a lot of information all at the same time, because it was TGS, they gave us a State of Play trailer. And then there was the gameplay trailers that all the creators released them at the same time because the embargo must have lifted, right? So like everybody's videos were posted at the same time. Yeah. And then we had a bunch of articles being released from the official Square Enix blog. And then we had like different clips from TGS being posted by people on Twitter and just, but yet it was like things that they hadn't even spoken about yet. So anyway, I was just really like, I was confused and I felt overwhelmed because there was just so much coming out at the same time. And I don't remember feeling this way with Remake. Just, I feel like it was a little bit more organized where they were trickling things out over time. Like, I remember we made whole episodes just talking about screenshots and talking about concept art. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there was no, where's the concept art? There's no screenshots that were released. It was just like, boom, here's the trailer. And now here's a gameplay video of the demo. And I'm like, what?
There were screenshots, but just screenshots of the trailer that was just released, basically.
Yeah, like it wasn't like just specific, you know what I mean? Like screenshots that were just for that purpose. Yeah. It's just kind of been go, 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 which is pretty crazy. And I'm okay with it. It's just a lot for us to kind of go through. So I felt like really excited. And then I felt really overwhelmed. And then I had to go away from it all. Like, then I just put my phone down and I was like, this is too much. Like, I was like, I'm gonna need some time to process everything that I just heard and saw. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, so that's why also partly we're releasing our episode now, which took us time, you know what I mean, to kind of go through everything and schedule to record. But it's okay, we're here now. So other than that, just, yeah, I'm just in awe of like everything that I saw, and I love pretty much everything that I saw. And there's some changes from the original that have been made, and things that we, you know, information that is different from, you know, things that they've changed from the original, which I'm totally okay with. But yeah. And I think, oh, I just added here as well, like, it seems like, I think this is what Max had said in his video as well, is that it's like remake and integrate and episode intermission was kind of an experiment to kind of come up with the systems. And now it's just like, this game is like everything that they wanted to make even then, but they couldn't because maybe it was hardware limitation or time or whatever. But this is kind of like the whole experience that they wanted us to have, but remake was just only a taste and kind of an introduction to ideally what they had perceived and conceptualized, you know what I mean, from the beginning. Like, that's what they wanted. This is what they wanted us to have, but maybe they couldn't give us because for some reason or other, obviously, like, you know, with hardware limitations. And also it was a multi-platform game, right? So we're looking at, the game was released on PS4 originally, so I just feel like they couldn't give us exactly what we wanted because of the hardware. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just really happy.
I definitely agree that the remake was basically a tech demo or something.
It, when you look back and you think about it, like, yeah, it pretty much was.
And less,
you know,
about the systems, but more about battle system in general. That was basically what the main building stone, the foundation they made, and all the other small things. But the presentation and how we went through the game via all those corridors is definitely, yeah, not so ideal. It was thematically fitting in terms of the claustrophobia of Midgar, like the oppressive system that is basically telling its story through gameplay and how we traverse the world. Made sense,
yes.
But still, in terms of gameplay, it's just, yeah, like a watered down preview of what they really wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's pretty much what we got, right? Like, looking back, even, like, I went, after seeing the demo, I went back to starting a new just playthrough of the game, and it's really good, but I feel like it's a little bare bones, like, just the battle system. And even though at the time when we played it, we were like, oh my god, this is so good, and it is really good, but we had nothing to compare it to, right? Like, that was the only thing. And I feel like when we play Rebirth, we're going to be like, oh my god, like, this is just,
yeah,
it's just so much better because it's been improved, you know what I mean? And I think that there's a lot of people waiting for this game because the original part of the Midgar section of the original game isn't the most exciting, I feel, and it goes by pretty quick, so they kind of extended the story there to make a full game out of it, which is totally fine, and they gave us more background and everything about the characters, and I love that part of Remake, and I love that game. But it just, I feel like people are waiting out for this one because this is the one where it's like, you know, the world, it's open world and they're going to be, you know, traversing the world. They have most of the party members, just, you know what I mean? So
it's a Final Fantasy again, like in the Golden Age or SNES and PlayStation era. You have your world map, which is very much closed off at the beginning. You can only go to one or two locations. But then it keeps opening up and opening up. You can backtrack more and more. You get your vehicles and chocobos, and you have access to much space and optional, I don't know, dungeons, I hope, and all those things. In the original game, we had the materia caves. We had the cave with Lucrezia in it. We had all those things. And it seems like they captured the spirit of the original FF7 with Rebirth, at least. To 80-90%, let's say.
Yeah, and it seems like Episode Intermission was kind of an experiment to develop Yuffie and just her combat system, right?
And Synergy.
And then build on that. And Synergy, Yeah, it was like an introduction to that. And probably Sonon's combat as well, they might borrow that for Cid, I feel. So they created
possibly
a character to experiment with those type of combat systems for Cid, maybe. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if maybe the attack animations are similar or something like that once we get Rebirth, you know what I mean? But it makes me anyway feel like that was the purpose for making Remake and Episode Intermission.
Certainly.
And it's so funny because somebody went back and actually commented on an old episode where we were talking potentially about part two and they put a timestamp, and then I clicked on it and it was me talking about, I'm like, I don't want to play, you know, DLC character missions like Episode Yuffie or something.
I've completely forgot about that.
That was like episode 16 or something like that. And this was before they even released Integrate. So anyway, yeah, I was like, oh man.
That's funny.
How things have changed.
Yeah, and now you're anyway. Loving it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, sorry, I talked a lot about my general ideas, I guess, and feelings about what we got. So what did you think, Viz?
Kind of like you, overwhelmed, but not to the point I had to disconnect. I just dug in even more. But I just still have no words, because there was this State of Play trailer, which we expected, actually. Thought it's time for a new trailer, and there were some, not leaks, but some rumors or some behavior from Square Enix and stuff that could indicate, or from other gaming people, that could indicate that there's something to show there. And it was. And was a phenomenal trailer. Really, it blew me away. It had everything in it: the silly, the serious, the cool, the mysterious.
Yeah,
just everything. It was, I think, 3 minutes of goodness. Was it around 3 minutes?
Yeah, 3 minutes is long for a trailer too.
Yeah, it was.
Like, they gave us a lot.
Oh yeah,
like,
and it was just,
you know what I mean?
Just normal stuff at first, a little bit of battle, and then suddenly, oh, the black chocobo is climbing the walls. Okay. And then the sky chocobo is floating across Cosmo Canyon, the area. What? And then you have the wheelie, the Segway with Cloud on it and Costa del Sol.
Yes.
What? And then just right back into the seriousness with the Sephiroth clones and this doctor and the degradation. And it's just a roller coaster of emotions all the way through. It's so good. And then I think a week later was Tokyo Game Show. Square Enix had a big stage reserved for themselves, a big area with possibly all the demo stands, and we were right.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh no, before that they released, like we mentioned before, the preview of the closed demo for certain influencers and media personnel. Mm. And that was... that even that in of itself was unexpected. I thought, well, just play a little bit of the flashback and that's it, basically. No. Junon area, a whole area to explore. And that was maybe even just 20% of the actual final game area, because they had like invisible walls that were just for the demo.
Right.
And that was...
Man, you were gone dark. You weren't even around. Like, you weren't even online. I was reaching out to Rima, like, where's Viz? Like, I'm here losing my mind. Like, I need somebody to talk to. And you were gone dark. You were not online for, like, days.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I know.
You're going to come back and you're going to lose your mind.
That was another thing. I needed to finish the analysis article on the Summer Game Fest trailer, because I, for many reasons, I just put it off. And just didn't feel like writing stuff. And I thought, no, I really need to finish that before anything comes out. And then I couldn't quite finish it. So I skipped State of Play for a few days, just held off. Didn't go to the internet besides our CCO server, and just didn't look into the Rebirth channel at all and the news channel. And it worked out well. And then I think it was 5 days later or something. Then I said, okay, now I'm done. And then we hopped into voice chat, like the six or seven of us or something like that, maybe even 10, I don't remember how many, jumped in and watched the State of Play again, the whole thing. I wanted to experience the whole thing again, or again, for the first time, the others just had to suffer with me again. And it was glorious. And then reading the articles and whatnot. And So we had the flashback demo for the Junon area, and a little bit of story with Mr. Dolphin. Mr. Dolphin. I love it. And then I thought, okay, TGS is coming up. They'll just show the same thing again. Maybe yeah, one minigame like they did with the squatting minigame back then in 2019.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Completely new and extremely long demo of the Grasslands with Chocobo format. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
And then even another trailer which showed off more shenanigans, especially minigame stuff. The Beck's badasses were back. And what is this?
Yep.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's just too much. I'm just going through things and posting in CCO gems on Twitter and writing the article for the minigames. The analysis article is still not done. After that, the article with all the mysteries and stuff like that. Chadley is back. Oh, come on. I can't. Yeah. I just can't.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, I didn't even know if you're going to want to watch all this, because I know how you are with spoilers. Like, with Remake, you were like, I'm not watching, I think, the last trailer or something like that.
Yes, launch trailer was it, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, well, we have to do a podcast episode about it, so we should probably like watch everything. Yeah. But there's a lot of spoilers in this.
It is.
Because it's not just, it's gameplay. And,
but it's also just from the beginning, basically, the first quarter of the game or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that bad. And now I know what I'm getting into, and I have a lot to just review and analyze, and it's really, really good. When there's the next showing, next trailer, maybe at the Game Awards, I might risk it. Maybe. I don't know. But the if there's a launch trailer, final trailer, nope, gonna skip that one. Because that's for the general audience, not for the fans. They'll spoil everything in there.
And that's traditionally when they do that, right? They showed like scenes from the end, I think, of the first game.
They
in
showed
the last
Barrett
trailer.
Stabbing, they showed the Wisp Wall at the end. They showed the Sephiroth battle, I think, battle against the Whispers. Yeah. Just everything. Nope. Yeah. Not going to watch that. Yeah. So that was it for this whole amount of information, the deluge of new impressions and everything. It's just unexpected, overwhelming, but great. Just treat like a Christmas cake or what have you.
A
huge thing just thrown into my face, and I liked it.
Everyone was like, Final Fantasy fans are eating today, y'all.
Yep.
And we're like,
a whole pork or something, I don't know, just whatever your favorite thing is,
whatever your favorite food
just
is, yeah,
just like
a whole pizza,
yeah, like a meter wide or meter diameter pizza or something, or I don't know, just I don't words. It's just too much.
Yeah, we gotta get some of those Final Fantasy 15 dishes in here.
Oh yeah.
Maybe there are a few ingredients around here.
I know that was a bad Donald impression, but the real Donald impression doesn't sound like Donald at all. I cannot speak like that. Anyway,
it's okay. We've only been recording for 20 minutes. We've already divulged into utter chaos.
Yeah,
that's okay.
It's chaos. That's what it is. It's just so much chaos, and all those interviews and articles and screenshots and.
We're just getting on that level.
Yep, definitely. I'll have material to analyze and dive into until February 29th for sure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
For sure. So before we dive into the details, just a few highlights I need to have stand out from all of this. Mm-hmm. Seriously, the minigames. Just not one or two. I think they're doing them all. They've shown 9 minigames already, and 2 of them are new. So then, as I said before, the chocobos, how they're now integrated into the world and traversal and kind of like Metroidvania aspect of the game now, of the world, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit of platforming kind
of. Yes, but we still have vehicles. The buggy, we have seen it. The tiny Bronco was announced in an interview. We will be able to ride around the world with that one. The areas are much larger than expected and all interconnected. Like, close to end game, we'll probably be able to just walk, run, drive everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, basically no loading. Kind of like the first God of War, the second I haven't played, but it's probably the same.
Yeah.
It's something to look forward to. And traversal was vastly improved in general.
Yeah.
In Remake, you could just run around between piles of junk in the slums, basically, or run around buildings, interiors. Now you can parkour over basically anything. You can scale walls if there are those yellow ledges. You can go swimming, and it's just great.
It looks like we're not going to be able to jump. We just have to go to the cliff and then press the action button. Like, you can climb it, right?
Yeah, it's
which is good.
It's a parkour button, and when it lets you, you can just scale everything and just jump down ledges or across gaps if it lets you. But there's not a dedicated jump button, which is good because Final Fantasy 16 was just useless, completely useless.
It was just, you could just jump and that was it. It was like a jump button for jumping and doing
in
nothing
battle,
else.
Yes, but while traversing, whenever I really wanted to jump over something, it wouldn't let me. Just, why is it here? Why does it exist? So Rebirth's interpretation of traversal seems to be quite solid. Mm-hmm. It looked a bit janky at times in the, especially in the, what was it, flashback demo, I think it was.
Yes, I agree.
And when you looked or watched the other NPC scale walls, especially Tifa, it looked kind of janky and too fast, but either we get used to it or they fix it in the coming months.
They fix it, yeah.
Because those demos are usually months old when they get released, so you can look forward to a hopefully improved parkouring and scaling walls and stuff. Yeah, and the bustling towns. Oh yeah, we also got to visit Calm in that demo from TGS. I didn't expect Calm to be that big and that populated
That's what I was going to say.
Dozens upon dozens of NPCs and stuff.
It seems huge.
Yeah. Indeed, did you see there's a Cactuar in there?
Oh, really?
I don't think I noticed that. Citizens are standing around a jumping Cactuar, just a Cactuar that moves around a bit. It's so funny. You can barely see it because those who recorded it. They don't actually go. They just run by those who recorded the footage, and you just see it in the background. Behind a few legs and stuff. But it's cool. It's really cool. And yeah, the synergy ability, seriously, they look so good. All those combinations, like we have, I think, 6 or 7 characters to play as in the end, fully play as. And then we have Vincent and Sid as well with more synergy abilities. It's just too much. Oh boy.
Yeah.
And what I really liked, it's still a great combination between a faithful retelling, like all the locations are there, some dialogue at the Chocobo Ranch are almost identical to the original game, for example. It's basically the same, just expanded upon, made bigger, more grandiose, more detailed, more involved. But still, it seems like a retelling of the original story in general. But then there's also this parallel mystery that makes everything fresh and new. And this is what I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. So we're going to jump in here. We've kind of divided all the information we've compiled it and divided this episode into different sections. So we're going to talk about the world first. So Viz, I just think that you should probably dive into the map. I know that you did a lot of investigating and putting, you know, trying to piece together the world map and on Twitter and with CCO. So did you want to talk about the map and what you discovered?
For sure, yeah. There's a lot to talk about. I'm not sure if I'm getting into everything, but
no.
First off, MaxDude did a pretty good job of moving around with the cursor around the whole area. So I was able to just piece together a relatively clean map with the addition of some screenshots from the TGS demo, where the grasslands are partially uncovered and sharper, of course, which made it a bit easier to then analyze and see what's there. And from that, I was able to see what's where certain locations are, where we arrived in the intermission bonus scene, where that is. I also measured the whole Junon canon and width of Junon. It's basically the same length as the distance from the exit of the Mythyl Mines until lower Junon. Not lower, I mean under Junon, where we where this small X fishing village is. It's, I think, 600 and something meters. And that's about the width of Junon, the whole thing. And I think around the length of the whole canon. So it's just big, that thing. It's really, really big. But then when you compare it to the rest, and that the grasslands are also on that same map. Junon is huge when compared to the original map. So they scaled down the continent significantly, which is kind of a shame, but understandable, because we wouldn't want to run for days to get across the continent. So it needs to make sense gameplay-wise too. So it's a bit of a shame from the world-building aspect. But gameplay-wise, I think they made a good compromise to have us seamlessly run through the world, make it feel big still, but doesn't feel like a whole lot of nothing to run through. So that's pretty much it. It's a shame that we don't see Midgar at all. But
Yeah, I was wondering, I wanted to ask you, like, the map that we saw in the demo, is it... It doesn't look like it's the whole continent, like the whole world. Like, you know how you can see a world map in the original, it shows everything, and then it shows where you are, but you can't get everywhere. Yeah. So we're just seeing a portion of that, right? Like, and that's, you think that's where the whole game of Rebirth is going to take place, is that part of the whole,
at least until,
like, the whole world?
At least until Junon. That's what we're able to traverse until Junon, plus a few areas that we probably couldn't in the original, like this... Or there's much more than we see in the demos. But this is only calm until Junon. That's the first continent. Then we have a second continent with the Gold Saucer, Cosmo Canyon, Nibel Mountains, Nibelheim, all that good stuff. And then a third one, which is the Northern Continent. Those three are in the game and fully traversable, and even traversable by probably Chocobo and Tiny Bronco. So you can just move between continents. That's how it sounded like, according to an interview with Hamaguchi-san.
Oh, okay.
So that's not an issue I think I will have, but still, when looking at the map, at the finished map, it will probably still feel like quite a small world from above, at least. But when running through and traversing, it might feel big enough to uphold the illusion of the planet. Let's hope, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and also the on top where you have the... You know, like the mini map, but it shows the distance, right? It's quite big. Like, it's showing how many, it's meters, right?
Yes.
It's like 10,000 meters or something like that, or more than that.
I think
in
this one scene with Yuffie and Red's synergy attack, it shows a distance indicator of 11,000 meters or something.
Yeah.
But the actual area we're at is still in the grasslands, according to my analysis. So it means the goal or the distance indicator shows or points to somewhere in the western continent, possibly Cosmo Canyon or Nibelheim, something, who knows, just somewhere over there. That then it makes sense that it's 11 kilometers.
Exactly,
otherwise it doesn't much. But in other scenes we see quite a lot, 1,000-2,000 meters away. This is on the same continent, so when you're in calm and one of the indicators points towards something in the Junon area, of course, 2,000-3,000 meters. It's pretty far, actually.
Yeah, I think so, and I agree with you. I think that it's going to feel large. It's not going to feel like, you know, small or like we're funneled. You know what I mean? Like in the original, when we were funneled down a hallway, like we might have some of that, but what I'm seeing, I'm happy with.
Yeah.
You know, where it's open, it looks large, we're going to be able to traverse with Chocobo. We have fast travel as well, right?
Yes.
As Chocobo. Okay.
Fast travel.
Which is awesome.
That's something I forgot to include in document, but fast travel is pretty cool. You can fast travel, I think, back to any location or town. You can fast travel to those Chocobo stops where the Chocobo chick leads you towards, and when you re-erect the sign, then it's unlocked as a fast travel point, which is pretty
oh,
neat.
I see. Yeah.
And I'm not sure if there's anything else, but there you can fast travel at any time to basically anywhere. There are enough points to travel to, I think. And even then, if you can call it on a chocobo or even the buggy, then you can traverse the world pretty fast anyway.
Yeah. I think it's going to feel large. And did you do the comparison between this map and Final Fantasy XV's map?
Oh, somebody did. Not I can't yet. Remember I completely who, forgot about that. I should probably.
But it just showed like that it's even larger than that.
Oh, I see.
Which it felt pretty open. Mm. You know what I mean? Like just obviously towards the end, it was more funneled down a hallway type thing to kind of the ending, which is unfortunate, which I hope doesn't happen here because, you know, where we're going to the northern continent. But I feel like it's going to feel like open and big, and which is what we want. Mm. And there's different biomes, so you're going to have snow, you know, yes, like different terrain. Mm. And it'll feel real, you know.
Oh, for sure, which, for sure.
Which is what I want.
Yeah. And it seems like chocobos, or I think it was even confirmed that certain types of chocobos are bound to a certain area, which means, for example, yellow chocobo is for the grasslands, the black chocobo is for the Junon area and everywhere there. And the sky chocobo mm-hmm. is most likely for Cosmo Canyon area, Nibelheim, just there, that portion, something like that. Maybe you can use those chocobos to go elsewhere too, who knows? But it seems, I think they're bound to their areas, their respective areas, for now at least.
Okay.
There was also talk about a river chocobo, which can speed across water, but that's the only thing I know. And it's just like one sentence in an interview. That's about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
Maybe there's a gold chocobo, which we can use to traverse the whole world. This would be pretty cool for endgame stuff.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I really, really hope that would be. Because then you're not bound to any area. And it would complete this whole Metroidvania concept that... The farther that's you go, good. The more is accessible to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might be right. You might be right about that. Mm. That would be cool.
For sure, for sure. Also, when you said about hallways and corridors, I think dungeons are basically that. Like the Mithril Mine, the G Cave, Mount Nebel, and others. Those are, at least in the flashback, it looked pretty linear, the mountains, which makes sense. It's basically a dungeon, and a dungeon is not a huge open area to explore. It's a...
No, exactly.
Not quite a hallway, but like an intricate maze sometimes, or a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about just going forward and overcoming obstacles. But then the zones, like the grasslands, Junon area, Gold Saucer area, Corel, and Gungaga, Cosmo Canyon, Nibelheim, etc., those will be the bigger zones, the bigger areas, which you can freely explore. And I think there's a good, if they do it well, a good pacing and a pendulum swing between both, linear and open.
Yeah, and I think that's what's key. Yes. You know what I mean?
And if you're not
I'm okay with doing dungeons that are more linear. Yeah. I don't mind that.
Oh, for sure.
Just not like the whole game.
It also doesn't overwhelm you. It's not one huge world. Exactly. It's many smaller worlds connected together.
I like that. Tunnels, instead of going here, just plop you in, and there's like, all right, go have fun.
Yeah, that's why I cannot.
And you're like, oh, there's so much to do.
That's why I cannot play those Zelda games, just too much, especially the new ones. It just too
that's
big.
Me.
I cannot.
I agree.
Yeah. Looking forward to traversing the world. Also, what I just remembered, it seems like all those things you can do in the larger areas are mostly optional. So we can, let's say in the grasslands, you go from Calm to Chocobo Ranch, do a side quest, so we get Chocobo, which you can then use to traverse the marshes, then go into the Mithril Mines. That's what you need to do, but you can do so much more for 10 or 20 hours if you want, but you don't have to. Same with the Junon area. You can exit the Mithril Mines, just run straight over to Under Junon, and then go into Junon and be done with it. But if you want, I don't know, 1 or 2 hours just, or even more, running around doing some side stuff.
Man, that's really what good. I'm going to do.
It's just optional. You do not have to.
That's what I did in Remake even. I just, when the game loaded, I'm like, it's like, go forward. I like turned around.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But there was
I jumped off the train and then I turned around and it's a dead end. Yeah. But it doesn't matter. I still went over there and I looked at everything and I was like, this is real.
Yep, it is. That's me too. Always turn around.
I'm gonna
spend
hours just like running around and like looking at all the trees or like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was me in the first demo. I think it took me around 2 hours or even more. I think because I was looking at everything, is even the schedule, posters
in the train,
the train schedule, and just I don't know. I was just having fun there.
Yeah, same. I do the same thing. It's going to be us. Everyone's going to be done Rebirth and we're still going to be in the grasslands looking at at the environment. Oh my God. Actually, I think you guys finished Remake before I did. I was lagging behind.
I think it took me 65 hours to complete the first time.
Yeah.
So it's pretty long. It's way above average. Average was, I think, 50, 45 or 50 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, this is $100 if you do everything.
Yep, apparently. So 150 for me at least.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone will be done. Their spoiler cast will be over. We still just haven't even recorded our first episode about it yet.
Oh, no. I think we have to record episodes in the middle when we're not even finished, like Grasslands episode, exactly. Junon episode, a Gold Saucer episode, something like that.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another interesting part is that something that many of us expected, that Fort Condor does not seem to be accessible. It's now on an island, which we supposedly cannot cross over to. And this is lore that Red 13 drops right after exiting the Mithril Mines when we start running towards Junon. It's pretty neat. Pretty cool, actually. And I don't think it's needed, Fort Condor, because it was optional in the original game anyway, and you could return to it at any point and continue your help for them against Shinra. So I think this is really something to be held off for the third game, which makes much more sense.
Yeah.
Same with Wu Chai,
and they said they were making changes where, you know, you're going to visit places out of order from the original. So,
and one example was Wu Chai, that we will not visit Wu Chai in this game, but in the next game. I think this also makes sense that the Wu Chai War and the conflict between Wu Chai, Avalanche, and Shinra was established in Remake, that it's kind of still ongoing, not hot war, but it's simmering underneath. Something's going on. Avalanche still taking hits against Shinra. And I don't think there will be so much more in Rebirth, because Rebirth is not about that, but we'll most likely experience or hear about certain things. Avalanche does this, Wu Chai did that, and stuff like that. But the actual thing, the culmination of everything between those three parties will happen in the third game, I think. Makes more sense, because Shinra will eventually find its end there, and we go to Wu Chai. And Fort Condor seems to be moved there as well. And Fort Condor, yes, most likely an avalanche base, seems like. And yeah, that's just where my mind is at right now. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, same. Oh my gosh. And then the Condor flies in and just like takes one of the clones. And I was like, okay, bye.
Yeah,
I'm like, bye, guy.
It just,
he's dead.
Yeah.
He ain't coming back.
No, we'll meet him when we go there in the third game or something like that.
Just lurching around there.
Yeah, exactly. There,
being confused, not being able to take part in the reunion. Oh, that's also a thing, a mini theory I came up with. Because actually, this Condor is the secret hero of the whole game, the whole story. Because he took one of the Rebirth clones, or the reunion clones, away. So that one is missing when the reunion happens. So the reunion is not complete. And this is how we win.
The whole story is actually being told by the Condor.
Yes. So Condor
from
telling...
the perspective of the Condor. Yeah, exactly. Like in Star Wars, apparently it's from C-3PO's point of view or something like that.
I don't remember. It's the Condor telling stories to his offspring, the Phoenix. Not the Phoenix, but the one that leaves the Phoenix material behind.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I love that. That was great. Yeah. It just flies down and takes him away. It's bye, guy.
Just why?
So that happened.
It's just a scene.
It's just matter-of-factly happened, and it's just like, oh, well, that happened. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yay, let's go explore.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, God, that was pretty dark.
Well, maybe we see the Condor before entering the mines. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe it takes away the snake after we kill it or something. Who knows?
Oh.
Midgar Stormer. Yeah. We'll see. The Condor will play a bigger role, it seems, because we already seen it fly over us and away in the intermission's bonus scene when everybody's looking back at Midgar.
Oh, right. That's true.
So Condor is there. I tell you, secret hero. You heard it here first. Yeah. But besides that, I'm so, so happy that all the locations we've seen, they look really good. So faithfully recreated and expanded upon. And it's really cool. Even if not all details.
Somebody posted a side-by-side between the original locations and the new ones in the trailer or in the demo and posted it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it just looks so good.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Like, it looks really similar, mm-hmm. like, if not exactly the same.
Yeah, certainly. Not overall, but certain sections or details are mm-hmm. certainly...
Like, it's identifiable based yes. on how you see it. Yeah. Like, they didn't, like, just completely change yeah, everything, exactly. you know what I mean? Like, it's been updated and just, like, well thought out.
Yes.
And, yeah, just...
It's like Sector 7, the slums.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same yeah. landmarks around the same layout in general. Like where each part is, but still it's kind of a little bit of skewed and pulled apart and stuff, and a little bit the proportions are different, but the general layout seems to be the same, which is good.
Yeah, I think this game is going to be like, it's going to be filled with moments where you're like, this is the first time that I'm going into Cosmo Canyon and I'm looking at it from this perspective yeah. and experiencing it again, but in a new way. Kind of like the remake was compared to the original, you know, when he jumps off the train and then gets to the reactor and then the camera kind of pans yeah. up and you're like, just like the original where you have, it's a moment, right?
Exactly.
That you'll never experience again because, I mean, you can experience it, but for the first yeah. time, I mean, you know, just like when you open up remake and you see the intro, obviously we watched that like because it was a trailer, but before, but... Yeah, I just feel like this game is going to be filled with so many incredible moments that people are going to remember, but it's going to be nostalgic, but it's going to also blow our minds. Like, I just feel like it's so... Like, what other game does that? I just don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to find something similar.
You know?
What's also very, very cool is when you first exit the train in Chapter 3 in Remake. In the original game, there's always this bird's eye view on the levels, on the... locations and surroundings, environments. But in the remake, you can turn the camera upside down, look upwards to the plate, exactly. and see how big and oppressive all the plates in Midgar is. And this is mind-blowing. And same as, as you said, Cosmo Canyon, I just realized, we saw it in the trailer, we run towards it and we can look up the mountain and see the observatory, which is cool. But when you're actually up on the observatory, you'll see the whole world. You can look onto the rise and see everything from above. Then you are actually the birds.
That's
going
to be crazy.
Getting chills. I want to play it now.
Yes, somebody somebody said that there's no photo mode in this one.
Oh, there is. I've seen a screen. Was it a screenshot or a menu during the demo?
I hope there is.
You saw photo mode.
You want to take pictures.
Yeah, I think it was in the Japanese presentation of the grasslands where I think they enter the menu and you see photo mode.
Well, that's good.
Or a screenshot, just somewhere in Japanese you saw photo mode. So it is good. There and it would make no sense whatsoever
if
they
just
thought,
yeah.
okay, let's just do away with it. Not after all those challenges they threw out into the wild.
Oh, right, with Remake, yeah.
Had everybody take part in those photo mode challenges and I think there were also giveaways for those who won.
Yeah.
So it would make no sense to just exclude it again. And now we have so much more to take in. So many vistas and camera perspectives we would never have dreamed of when playing the original.
Exactly. That's one of the things about the original. Like, you can't look up. Yeah. You're looking down on everything.
Exactly.
So, you know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to imagine that Midgar's plates are above your head, but you never see them.
Exactly.
So
the only part you could kind of get an idea is when you're up, I think, in the underplate in Chapter 6, but in the original game you were also running across the catwalks and the platforms and stuff, and you could see the slums below.
You can see it,
but low resolution, of course, but you know, okay, it goes down far.
And then when you first exit Midgar as well, there's like a pixelated image right in the background that shows Midgar.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see it and the wall and everything, but...
It's still not the same.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Did you see this one short scene during Chadley's explanation of the remnant wave towers and stuff? There's one short shot of the grasslands and Calm and Midgar in the back. So you do see Midgar behind Calm.
Oh, yes. God. No, I missed that. Okay, I'm going to have to rewatch it.
Yeah, the thing is, in Schrodinger's Baby Seals video, he cuts away before that shot. But complete... it is there in the Japanese presentation, but there's also a video of the full presentation, I think around 30 or 35 mm-hmm. minutes, English only, uncut, no commentary, and you see it there too in pretty good quality.
Really? Okay, I'm going to have to rewatch it.
Or I'll send you a screenshot afterwards.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Obviously, it's more than likely just like a static image of it.
Of course,
right?
yeah.
Because you can't go back
it's,
there.
It's, so. You see it. It is a low resolution 3D model in the far back, of course.
In the back. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm. All right, guys. So moving on here, we're going to be talking about gameplay systems. So I know that we talked about the traversal a little bit of his already. So we talked about we have free traversal now. So it looks like we've got parkour, swimming, climbing walls. Obviously, with the help of chocobos, we'll be able to get to, you know, higher areas that are inaccessible without a chocobo, just like in the original. A new system it looks like we got is item transmutation. Now, I was listening to another video game podcast, and they were saying that crafting was in the original remake, and I was like, no, it wasn't. There was no crafting.
You could upgrade your weapons, yes, but...
You could upgrade your weapon, yeah, exactly. But there was in Final Fantasy 15, though, where you could create your magic and it was a consumable.
Oh, yeah, magic.
Right? And, but not in remake, but...
And in FF16, anyway. You had kind of a little bit of a basic crafting system where you can create your gear, but that's about it.
Yeah, but it looks like we're getting a new system, so that's... It just looks like a more interesting and exciting way to... You know, give us another system to just kind of play with and create things with and then use, you know, in combat or whatever. I think we talked about one of the criticisms. I think we talked about this before was that the original never had this and it didn't have like weapons being able to be upgraded, which, you know, kind of made some weapons redundant eventually. You know what I mean? Which is one of the plus sides of remake. So I'm excited to see what they do with weapons. I don't think that we saw any weapon upgrade screen or anything like that in the demo, right?
I don't think so, but in the main menu, you could see that there's a weapon level. So it seems to be back to weapon upgrade system, but I hope they expanded upon it and did away with all those clunky menu transitions and navigation within the weapon universe.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
we did talk about chocobos, so it looks like you had said, there's different types of chocobos per region is what it looks like. There is a side quest, right, where we have to catch a chocobo once we get to the chocobo farm. Chocobo Billy is there, which we'll talk about some of the characters a little bit later. So that looked awesome. I was really stoked about that, really excited that they have that in there. Scouring for items once we use a chocobo. So obviously we can go to, you know, there's a portion of the map that we just kind of stand over and then we're searching for items underground so we can find treasure that way. Obviously there's things that we can just collect on the world map, like as we're in the grasslands, like they showed that, which is awesome as well. And what else? Oh, we got chocobo gear, which is amazing. Like, it looks so cool. I'm not sure if it has a function outside of other than cosmetic.
It does.
Oh, it does? They showed it?
No, they didn't show it, but Hamaguchi talked about it briefly, and it will affect stats for the chocobo race in Gold Saucer.
That is amazing.
It is, yeah.
Okay, that is so cool. And it shows, like, the gear on them, like, as you're on them, which is...
Yeah, it's definitely cosmetic, too, but it has a function and
so
purpose,
cool.
too. Yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. It looks like we're losing chocobo breeding. We're not sure yet, right?
In this game, there is no breeding. That has been confirmed. But we don't know if there will be breeding in the third game. I hope so.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like they probably, if they change it or if they don't give it to, for me, like, I don't really care, honestly. Like, I'm okay with it. But, you know, I can understand, like, people want to have it in there. Mm. If it's in there, it's in there. Awesome. But I'm okay with the system that they're giving us for chocobos for this game. Everything that we've seen, I'm happy with.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they're giving us more, like the gear, the cosmetic, right? And just the different types. I don't know. Yeah. I'm happy with what I saw.
Chocobo breeding wasn't even available in the story section we play in Rebirth anyway. Yeah. So it is an addition.
Right, that's true.
So we didn't lose it. It's just not there. But we do have different chocobos.
And obviously chocobo chick. So, you know, we find an outpost. We have to pick up the sign and then you essentially activate fast travel, right? Yeah. And you can also summon your chocobo anywhere in the world.
Yes.
That's correct. Yes. Like anywhere in the world.
After you caught it, yes.
Okay, perfect. And then if we're in a different area and we have, like, let's say a blue chocobo, when we summon the chocobo, it'll be a blue one because we're in that region.
Yeah, that's how it's
how it'll work.
It's region specific, yeah. What's also...
People were a little bit off-put, though, because the chocobo chick has, like, a nut on its butt.
Yeah, coconut butt. It's so weird.
And they're like, what is that? Anyway, yeah, whatever. I just think it's a cute design. Yeah.
Maybe it has some Pampers on or something. I don't know.
It just hatched.
Yeah,
hatched, and it has the egg still attached to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it. That must be it. But what I really find really cool and cute is you can pet the chocobo chick, and then it gives you a chocobo plume, which you can then use to buy chocobo gear.
Mm.
So everything is connected. This is what I like. All this, many yes. systems are interconnected. It's not
are
just
all connected. Yeah,
one system does this, one does that, but you have to do things to enhance the other system, which is then used to expand on in the other system and the world and traversal and stuff. It's really cool and really well made. Also, going back to the items transmutation for a second.
I was just thinking the same thing. I'm like, I'm sure that I've missed a lot about that.
I
like,
just remembered that you can run around the world and just pick up random stuff, just some small ingredients and what have you.
Yep.
And those are then needed for item transmutation as ingredients. So this is something that reminded me of Horizon, for example, because there are so many things lying around you can pick up with Triangle. And here you can pick up with Triangle as well. Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West influences are everywhere. Even catching a chocobo. Have you noticed it? Catching a chocobo. Well, I don't think you have finished Horizon, as you said before, right?
No, I haven't. That's okay, though. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, it's not really a spoiler or anything. It's just something that's pretty early on available. But you have to enter certain cauldrons, which upgrade your spear then, and then you can override certain types of machines. And if you can do that,
okay. Yeah, I remember
then
that.
You're able to override certain machines and then mount them. And the process is basically identical to chocobo catching. You have to sneak around, make sure that the target machine or any other machine around it doesn't notice you, because otherwise it's, they're alert, run away, or attack you. So you need to sneak through tall grass, and you can also use stones to distract it so it's turned away from you, and then you can safely approach it from behind, press, or in the case of Horizon, hold Triangle to override the machine, and then you can mount it. And in Rebirth, it's just press Triangle, then Cloud jumps onto the chocobo, does a little rodeo dance, and then the chocobo accepts Cloud and then their friends.
Yay.
Yeah, it's basically the same. So you notice it. But I don't mind, because it's a cool system. It makes fun. And I think it will become more involved and more complicated, or maybe more difficult each time you have to catch a new chocobo. That's my theory, because otherwise it will become just stale if it's the same every time.
Yeah. Did they say that the developers, that they were kind of inspired by Horizon?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they were, right? They said that multiple times, I feel.
Yeah, Hamaguchi
was
interviewed.
So it makes sense that they would use that.
I think there was an interview of a myriad of developers about their favorite games or stuff like that, or favorite inspirations. And Hamaguchi was also interviewed and said, Horizon had a huge influence on him. He loves that game. And it's basically part of his inspiration for certain gameplay elements in the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it shows, so, but I don't mind. If it works in the context of Rebirth and all the systems, if it doesn't feel tacked on just for the sake of it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good.
Yeah. I was just going to talk about transmutation again. Do we have, I can't remember seeing materia transmutation. Like, can we combine different materials, fusion in Crisis Core?
No, it doesn't seem like it, but Chatley's back, and he will sell you materia when you unlock those remnant towers and maybe do more analysis of enemies and stuff. I don't quite know, but he has new materia.
I remember seeing that there is materia that's two in one.
Yes. Fire and ice.
So I might have been confused about that.
Or lightning and earth.
It's like two in one.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Which is pretty
cool. Would probably help with having to equip two separate ones and use up two slots instead of just one slot, which I like that idea. Yeah. So,
and then connect it with a elemental weapon, elemental material in your weapon, and then lightning and ice, or fire and ice attack, or in your armor to protect yourself against both, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Maybe there's even a tetra elemental materia, which is all four.
Oh man, yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Maybe there's a materia fusion and they just haven't shown it off yet.
They haven't shown it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Who knows?
All right. So moving on here, we're talking about... Oh, sorry. Did you want to say something?
Oh, yeah. There's a few more things in the world, the gameplay systems.
Right.
Yeah. Those here. We already talked a bit about Buggy and Tiny Bronco, but I just wanted to mention it again. And it's... The Buggy looks almost identical. Well, identical.
Yeah, I saw your...
It looks... Good.
Your post on Twitter where you had the comparison, it has the lightning bolts and a few other elements.
The back grill with the turbine or something like that, which lets you go through water and stuff. And everybody's in there. And what I also noticed, Cloud and Yuffie are in the front, both that suffer from motion sickness are in the front, and the others who don't care are just in the back hanging out.
I hope we're going to get some banter with them as they're driving around.
And Yuffie always throwing up at times when we like ride over bumps. Oh no, not again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the banter when they were on the freeway in Remake.
Oh, yeah.
Like towards the end was awesome. Yeah. It was so good.
It was pretty good, yeah. I'm also reminded a bit of the banter in Uncharted 4 when they're driving the car across this huge area.
That's true.
And they have banter so much. And when you're like driving over a kind of a cliff and fall down a bit, and then it shakes everybody, they react to it and then continue the conversation afterwards. It's really, really well done. Mm-hmm. I hope something like that will also find its way in there to lighten up the mood a bit and stuff.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be a terrible driver. I'm just putting that out there.
Drive over everything
into everything.
I'm always
terrible. Oh my God, especially the Regalia, like when you turn it into the plane or the airship thing, man.
Regalia Type
I
F,
could never land that thing.
Yeah.
Every time I tried to land, it was like, I killed them all. And then it was like, game over. I'm like,
story over.
Trying to get to the Pityos Ruins.
Oh.
Like just getting there was the worst part for me.
It took me a few tries until I managed barely. Then it took me over 4 hours to get through with Pityos Ruins.
Oh my God.
Oh boy. Yeah, I don't think something like that will find its way into Rebirth. Nope. It was just egregious. It was fun, but kind of...
Hopefully they learned. Yeah.
Not doing it again. Yeah. Regarding Tiny Bronco, there was something interesting said about it, that you can fly it, but only for a short time until you then have to... drive it through the water. So either Hamaguchi was talking about just a cutscene where it flies and then it gets shot down, or they change up the events a little bit and we're able to fly a little bit, like in a certain area, and then something happens, it gets shot down or breaks or something, and then we just have to use it as a boat, basically. We'll see. But I thought that was an interesting quote.
That's cool.
But yeah, we'll see. I hope we'll be able to fly on our own, like manually, for at least a little bit. Oh, maybe it's not a cutscene now, because in the original game it was a cutscene when they lift off, flight over Rocket Town, then everybody shot at them, then it got hit, then they talked a little bit, and then it just dove into the ocean. Maybe that's kind of like a flying mini game a bit, that we can fly around and have to dodge. Maybe bullets and missiles and stuff like that. And then we get hit anyway. I don't know. Who knows?
Interesting.
So that it's a little bit more involved, not just a cutscene.
It's a cutscene, but then we get shot at, and then we go and we dive into the water, but then it's damaged, so we can only fly for a little bit after that because...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, going forward, when we're using it, we can only... Because it needs to be repaired, and we can't repair it yet or something? I don't know. I'm just trying to think about ways where it would make sense for that.
Well, who knows? Maybe it gets repaired by the end, then we can use it to fly around the place.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. And then we can go get the Knights of the Round. No.
I don't think in that game, but I get you. I want to see them too, Knights of the Round. Some people suggested that it should be, like... an actual main story quest tied to the ancients and stuff like that, but I don't know.
Ooh, yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we'll see that in this one.
No.
I don't think so.
Nah.
That's went for when the PS6 comes out.
Oh, yeah.
For the next part.
Yeah. I just remembered we still haven't talked about the summons yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say we need to talk about the summons, yeah. Because I remember that we see Odin actually the first in the trailer. It's the first time it looks like we're fighting the Midgard.
Yeah, Midgard Storm. Midgard Storm.
Mm-hmm. Which is not how we get Odin in the original. So
no, I'm pretty sure that this is just kind of a debug thing because HP is very low there too. So. But who knows? Mm. Maybe we get Odin there and not in Nibelheim. But I would find this a little bit weird, getting Odin this early. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, it's okay. I just
remembered and jotted it down for later. Yeah. We already did talk a little bit about Chatty and the Towers, but only briefly. Mm-hmm. So I want to get into this a little bit more. In Remake, Chatty was just our materia dispenser, basically, and our VR guy, with which we could just fight against summons and get the materia out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But here, he wants us to activate all those old Remnant towers, which were erected by the old Republic of Junon, which is also not new lore, but new in the mainstream, let's say, because it's basically buried in Ultimanius, I think, the old Republic of Junon lore. And now they're bringing it to the forefront because in Junon itself, under Junon, I think they also talk about it a little bit, like the NPCs when you walk by. I remember somebody mentioning it. And yeah, Shinra took them over, but then abandoned them because they weren't useful or something. I don't know. And Chatty wants to reactivate all of it to get a better lay of the land, like have the network up and running to analyze the whole world, not just research materia, because now he's free of Hojo. He wants to travel the world and wants us to help him again to expand his horizons. I think there's much more to it, but that's for later when we get into the mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
Or later, yeah. I mean, in another episode, because we won't get there. It's too much to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's pretty cool. At first, I thought, oh no, Ubisoft Towers, but it's different. it just unveils a few points of interest, like combat assignments, life stream or life springs or life springs, whatever those are, and I think proto relics we have to find, and what was it? Was something else? Summon crystals too, like all those things get unveiled or at least partially, just some points of interest get revealed, so we know, oh, there is something that we do not have to wander around the world aimlessly and randomly stumble upon things, which I find pretty cool. But it does not lift the fog of war, which is good.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I thought that when you activated it in the demo. Yeah, I noticed that when they showed the map, it didn't get rid of the
fog. Yeah, exactly. Which I think this is really good because then you see where you've been and what you've uncovered. No, it's not just.
I agree. So it's based on where you've been yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It kind of. I like that. Yeah, for sure.
But they still are not just running around blindly. You know, oh, there are points of interest. I want to go there. And on the way there, you notice a few more things, like the Morgue House. That's too much.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's about it regarding Chatty. I was expecting him to be there, but not expecting him to just drop out of nowhere at the Chocobo Farm. Like, okay, what are you doing here?
yeah and it looks like we're getting VR sim battles again, but we just don't know how. Maybe they're just unlocked once you progress to a certain point in the story. Or what did you think about, like, after you like turn on a certain amount of towers or something like that? Maybe, I don't know,
possibly, or just like in Remake, we go to Chatty and then the next summon is unlocked or the next VR mission is unlocked. Who knows? Because there is a screenshot and a short trailer segment or clip which shows Alexander in the VR space.
Yeah.
So
it will return. So we know it's returning, but I can't remember seeing it in the menu, like when they're talking to Chatty and doing the tower.
I don't remember. I should check again, but I didn't see it. Maybe it will unlock later or only when you're in.
Yeah.
In towns or something? I don't know.
I think in Remake it was just when we got to a certain part of the story or a certain thing happened, then it unlocked it. And then we just went back to him and did them, so.
Yeah. You reach Sector 5 Undercity, Shiva's unlocked. You reach Wall Market, Fat Chocobo's unlocked. And so on, so on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, all the jobs are back. now we have a blackboard. Or how is it? I think it's called not something else, a blackboard. It's called a silent board or something. I don't remember how it's called exactly in the
game. A bulletin board?
Or something like that, yeah. But it seems like every location has one. Then you can just check it out and see what people need you to do. And in the demo, we grab one assignment. This farmer has troubles with some weird fiend that's attacking his cattle. And we get just a little bit of a taste. It doesn't show the full quest. We just start running into one direction with Chocobo, where the Chocobo scent leads you, and then it fades out. But it's, I think it's pretty good from the onset, because it's the only one that's shown, and this one is already a good side quest because it involves Red 13 for one, and for another, it's not just, oh, go do this, and then you go do this, and then it's done. It's just, it's kind of like setting up mystery. Hey, something is wrong here. Somebody's attacking my cattle, or just ripping apart, or stealing them. I think it was stealing or something. It's a fiend, but couldn't take a hold of that fiend, doesn't know what's it, and then you don't know what's up. So you need to explore yourself. You need to put on your detective cap and find the source and stuff. And those are side quests I like, that are mysterious from the onset. Or you think it goes into one direction, and then it turns out there's something completely different behind it. And
yeah, I agree.
And the Trail series does those kind of side quests really, really well. I reference them because I'm playing Trails of Cold Steel 3 at the moment. So.
Yeah, I like these types of quests as well. And then when you're on your way there, you just stumble on something else. Exactly. And then you're like, oh God, what's that? And then you go investigate. You might be rewarded for that. And then you're like, or there's something like a door or a dungeon where you can go in. But you're like, okay, make a mental note. I have to come back here when I'm done this quest. And then you go do that. And then on your way back, you stop there. I don't know. It just want to go and do things. And it's fun and interesting. And you're discovering things in the world. You know what I mean? Like, it's a new area. So I like these types of these quests.
I think Horizon does this too, that when actually there's something I noticed much more in Forbidden West, you do not need to explore everything first and then do all the quests and stuff. Most quests and side quests and activities will lead you to basically all the important areas in the world when you do them. So you can start a quest, it leads you there, but then of course, as you said, you notice, oh, there's something else there. There's a cave, or there are collectibles, or there's in the distance another tower I can scale, or something like that.
Exactly.
Which you could just stumble upon while running around in the world, but you don't need to. The quests lead you to those points of interest too. And I think this is something that also happens here in Rebirth. As we've even seen in the Grasslands demo, when we need to, or we are running towards one of the combat assignments. I think which one was it? The enemy dunk, the elephant dunk variant, the red ones. On the way there, we stumble upon the mock house, which is just there. Stuff like that. And this is something I really like. And there's, as I mentioned before, really strange, just in the middle of a trailer, just Cloud riding a Segway. Why? But in a... In an interview, I think it was Hamaguchi said that they wanted to find a fun way to run around in Costa del Sol, because just running around by foot is not that interesting. So I thought, oh, why? I think even in Japan, those wheelies or segways were also kind of in by the time they were developing it. So I thought, well, why not?
Ooh, okay.
Let's introduce that one to get around the place faster and more fun, have more fun while doing so. And I think we get even a reward by traveling a certain distance. I think I remember reading it in one of the interviews.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering what the distance marker was. I thought it might have been a mini game or something like that.
Either that, or I thought, well, you need to pay for every 1,000 meters or something. But this would suck. Hmm. But getting rewarded by traveling more distance, why not? Also, I posted it, I think, yesterday. Did you see that there's a ramp leading down?
Yeah, I saw the ramp. Yeah. You're like, I want to know what happens when he goes over ramp.
that's just a ramp that possibly leads down to the beach.
That's what I was thinking.
And then you can I think it's just a shortcut. Maybe you can even do some cool flips or something while in the air. Who knows? I don't know.
That would be cool. Yeah. I like the idea of using it and then getting rewards for the amount of distance that you've traveled in it.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't think you're going to be able to take this out of Costas El Sol, right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You'll probably
When this game comes to PC, people are going to mod that. So they can travel the world with this Segway.
You can ride across the ocean with that thing or something.
Oh, you know it's going to happen. It's great.
Yeah. Or use it as a black chocobo replacement. Just ride along the walls.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it will be glorious. That's for
it
sure.
It will be.
That's for sure.
All right, guys, moving on here. So our next section that we're going to be talking about is the combat. So we're just going to highlight some new elements to the combat that we saw in the gameplay demo and also some of the things that were explained in the articles that were released from the developers as well. So it looks like we have the same core combat system as what was in Remake, but they just took that and they've improved upon it and they have built and added things to it and kind of fleshed it out so we have more choice. Because in the original Remake, like, one of the complaints was that, you know, you're just doing regular attacks to fill up your ATB and then you're spending your ATB bar charge on an ability or, you know, to heal or magic or item or whatever. But sometimes you're waiting. There's a little bit of waiting. You know, you're actively attacking, but you're just doing it so you can build up ATB bar. So I like the additions to the battle system in Rebirth.
Yeah, definitely. This, at first, I was a bit confused when people were talking about, hey, there are synergy abilities that do not cost anything. What? This is overpowered. Why? What? But it makes sense that there are probably much less powerful, but still usable, have utility. For example, I think one of them is Bodyguard, which Aerith and Cloud and possibly others have. I think I saw a Matrix made by somebody somewhere that there are certain free synergy abilities which are shared between certain combinations of characters. Not each combination of characters have their unique ones, but some share them. I think Aerith can do the Bodyguard with Cloud and even Tifa. With Tifa, it's another one, I think. But I saw some overlap there. But yeah, with Bodyguard, I think Cloud just basically teleports just right in front of Aerith to block the attack or something. Mm-hmm. It's really cool that they integrate something like that, because then you have so many more options to save yourself from damage or break the enemy's defense or something like that without having to first build up your ATBs or the synergy pips or what have you. You can still do things.
I like that too.
Yeah. And with the synergy is quite an interesting concept. In Intermission, it was very basic. You just used ATB as well for the synergy abilities because Sonon wasn't playable, so it worked out. But here we have to use ATB abilities to build up our pip. So one ATB use is one pip, and certain synergy abilities use two pips or three pips on both characters that use it, and then you just consume the pips. And I think when you use a synergy ability, you get an additional pip on the limit meter, because there's sometimes this additional yellow pip at the end of the limit bar. Maybe then you're able to use synergy limit breaks, because that was also a thing in
you can Intermission. Yeah, you can. I think that they had stated that there's synergy limit breaks. Yeah.
I think that's how it works. There's so much to analyze. I haven't been able to go through everything, but I think that's how it works, that you use synergy abilities to enable synergy limit breaks for those two characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why they even introduced this involved synergy system is to increase the bonds of the characters while you play. You play with the characters, those characters do things together. Even you as a player, you bond with them, or you see them doing things together. You see them bonding during battle and stuff. And that's important, apparently, for them to, that the whole group bonds with each other, they become friends. And then it's even more crushing when one of them is not there anymore. Stuff like that. Yeah. Now I think it's a good addition. It increases the value of the whole battle system. It's not just attacking, use magic, and kill things. There's so much more to it. And when you have so many options, you can design your or create your own a play style. You do not have to play in a certain way that the game tells you to.
Exactly.
You have so many options, so many tools to utilize. And according to some who have played the demo, especially the Junon bit, I think Max Dude said it and others too, that when they first play through it, certain combat assignments, and especially the boss in Junon, they got slapped to the ground because they weren't able to utilize all those battle system perks and stuff like that. But as soon as you know how to use all those elements and how to use them together, then things die fast, apparently. So this is good.
Okay.
It's when you learn the systems and know how to use it, and it's still not purely action. You can still use tactical mode and think what to do next. You do not have to use the shortcuts. You can still use your menu and do everything there, which is good for those who have not the fastest of brains like myself. Action games are not really my thing.
Yeah.
And especially fighting games, my brain just doesn't work this fast. I start to just react to things and then I hope everything goes well. So for me, tactical mode is ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to play it more just like an action. I'm going to try anyway and just decide what I'm doing like on the fly. But
well, sounds good. Yeah, I think I utilized shortcuts more and more during Remake, but still sometimes use tactical mode when I need to just take a breather and think for a second to choose what to do next.
Yeah. It just seems like we just have choice,
yes,
which is what we want.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We just don't want to be limited to using just one
exactly
aspect of the system. So I'm really happy with everything that they showed. It was my understanding that if you are, like you said, you're building character bonds in gameplay, which makes sense. So you gain affinity like with that party member, and then you are able to unlock more synergy abilities, I think, the more you use them.
I think there was something like
that. Or upgrade them, something like that, which is what I like, because in the original we did have the affinity system that was kind of invisible, and then it determined certain dialogue choices, or for example, who you went on the date with at the Gold Saucer. Like, that was invisible, so it just depended on what your choices were in your discussion or your dialogue choices determined that
mostly
in the end.
And who you talked to first after a certain thing, or if you even talk to them at all.
So I like this because it's kind of that, but it's actually affects the gameplay and the battle system, you know what I mean, as well. So
although
I'm really excited about this.
I don't think it's confirmed that the synergy system contributes to the affection system, but it's possible, and I hope it is the case, so that we have basically for each character pairing, we have a certain synergy or affinity value that goes up, and the higher it is, the more we can do in battle with that pairing.
I think that's how it works. I read something, I think that they might have translated it from Japanese, so I could be wrong, but there's a lot of things that might have been translated wrong, but that was my understanding anyway. But well, I guess we'll see. But I'm just really happy with all of these improvements. And I think that they improved the aerial combat too, which was one of the criticisms that we had about
Remake.
So they have a separate, I think it's a separate, is it a separate
shortcut
branch of, oh, is it just shortcut?
I think for the shortcuts,
I thought it was a separate branch of aerial combat in the menu that you choose to unlock, and then you can jump and do something.
I think it was setting up your shortcuts. So you can set up shortcuts for ground level and for aerial, so that you have different shortcuts in the air, because certain abilities abilities from, I don't know, innate character abilities or even materia abilities that can also be deployed in the air. So you can
which was the problem with the original, was you didn't decide
exactly
when Cloud jumped in the air and would attack, and you couldn't do anything.
I don't think you can jump on demand, but when Cloud jumps into the air, and I think you have more control by knowing which abilities throw or lift Cloud up into the air, you can deploy this ability first and then use one that can also be used in the air and then keep going. So there seem to be a lot of improvements. How to play, I don't know. I haven't been able to play, of course. Square Enix, please notice me. No, that was a joke. But this is something I really look forward to, how aerial combat plays and the whole synergy system and all of that. And what I also noticed, what's really good, is that you are able to set up three combat parties, and you can switch between those three at any time outside of combat. So it's not like when you want to switch parties around, you have to go into the menu and switch them around and do all this materia and equipment stuff. I haven't seen it in the menu yet. Well, I haven't analyzed the menus that extensively yet anyway.
Yeah.
But I hope that you cannot only create 3 loadouts for just character combinations or formations, but also their equipment, so that each of those 3 loadouts have different equipment and stuff. So you can just switch without having to reallocate all those materia and re-equip all your equipment, because maybe you only have 2 accessories of a type, and then you want those 2 on the other 2 characters in the other configuration. So we have to switch that. So I hope it's something similar to Crisis Core Reunion, where you had 5 loadouts for Zack, which means you have 5 different combinations of materia and gear equipment. You can just switch between them.
You mean like outside of battle, right?
Yeah, in the menu, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Within battle, no, but outside of battle, you can just switch in the menu. I think I only used 2 in my playthrough, so you could... I had one for just normal story stuff where I wanted to level up all the materia. And then I had one for missions, which was just the best things in there, all leveled up.
Yeah.
So I could just rush through the missions and have it a little bit easier to go through. And I think that's how it will be, because otherwise it wouldn't make much sense to only create battle formations, character formations, but you still have to re-equip things. And yeah, we'll see, I guess. I could go on and on about this topic.
Yeah, for sure. So you had written here as well that the rest of the party takes part passively at the edge of the battlefield, so they do occasionally attack. Sorry. I didn't notice that actually when I watched it. I didn't notice that happening.
Mm. Yeah, it's you have to watch pretty closely, barely see it if you don't look for it. But I think the best example is when the battle against the Terror of the Deep begins, all 5 characters are actively in battle, and then they just spread out, and afterwards those 3 you play as or control those usually in the fray, and the others are just running around on the outside. And Aerith and Barret, of course, can easily attack, and they also do. You see them shooting. Tifa, I don't think I've seen her attack yet. I think in one scene I've been watching through today, I think I saw her start charging up something, maybe a magic attack or something, but then the camera just moved away and I couldn't see what she was doing, but I think I saw something. So it's possible that you can maybe configure what they're able to do outside or something.
That would be cool. I would like
because
that.
Because there are systems they have not shown off yet.
That would be nice, actually. Because you're like, you're going to attack, you're going to focus on healing. Maybe they can just give you a little boop.
Yeah, exactly. That's they sometimes
like
heal.
Like Aerith can heal you or something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that would be cool. That you can select how they act when they're outside. Or that they maybe even depending on your affection level or synergy level, that you unlock more stuff between those.
Cool.
So that when Cloud's in danger and his synergy level with Aerith is high enough, you can equip heal me now, a basically heal me now ability for Aerith that she heals Cloud or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Or maybe it's a general level that you basically a synergy skill tree or something that you can unlock certain passive abilities. Oh yeah, passives. I think that's what it was. Maxud was talking about passives that they have not revealed yet. There are some sort of passives, and I think those passives are for those that are not within the active battle party.
Yeah. So we're not getting character swapping on the fly during a battle.
Doesn't look like it.
Okay.
Which is kind of a
That's
shame,
okay,
but
though.
It's okay. Yeah. I think it works. Because you can swap just when battle is finished or before you go into the next battle, you can swap between those 3 loadouts. So there's that. At least something. Okay. Yeah. As we mentioned before, there are pretty cool summons. Odin is there. Alexander is there. And in a short clip in the trailer, you can see Kujata. Like this multi-elemental giant ball with 3 heads stacked on top of each other. It's such a weird design, but it's really cool. And yeah, there's not much more to it. Though I did read in one interview that it was revealed that there's one summon that has not been in any FF7, in the whole FF7 canon yet, that is new. And there's even a side quest attached to it, apparently. And people are theorizing that it could be Gilgamesh, because in this Tokyo Game Show trailer they showed after the Grasslands demo. At the very end, we saw a short scene which kind of looks like Wutai. And then you can you see parts of a Japanese-like helmet with a horn and the shoulder, and it's red. It's a red armor. So it could be Gilgamesh.
Interesting.
And also, Gilgamesh has been introduced to, what was it? Ever Crisis as a skin, I think, was announced just recently. So MJ Gallagher did post it on his Twitter that it got introduced and that it could be Gilgamesh that is being added to Rebirth. Would be really cool because Gilgamesh is always a fun addition, especially when he's included in the story, like especially in FF5, where I think he made his debut, where he keeps just coming up and having his rivalry with Bartz. But even in FF12, where he did he appear a couple of times or just once on the bridge in the mines? I don't remember. But there, I think you beat him and then you go somewhere else, and I think afterwards he nabs the sword you just leave there. There's just something about him. There's not just an enemy and you kill him and done. There's just always more to him.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
And you think that they were talking about another summon from another Final Fantasy game, not just like a new summon that they created from scratch?
I don't know. It's usually one from another Final Fantasy
like
game.
That they borrowed?
They have so many that can draw from. There's no use to just create a new
one. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the ongoing theory anyway.
So it looks like Alexander is attainable, like we said, through a VR mission because we can see the little pixel things in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it looks like Odin shows up during the Midgar Zolom fight, which isn't where we get him in the original.
Nope.
So I was a little confused about maybe it's just part of the story where he comes and helps the party and then leaves.
Oh, that could be because the snake is too...
And we're like, whoa, that was weird. Yeah. What was that thing?
It's
you
too...
know what I mean?
Too strong for us. And then before, I even think I checked it today again, and it does look like the Midgard snake is charging up Beta because his maw, so the teeth in his mouth and the fangs, or not really fangs, but the claws around its, I forget how it's called, let's say sails of the cobra, like those flaps that are sticking out. I forgot how they're called in English. Those are also glowing red. So it's possible that it's charging up Beta and then Odin comes in and dispatches of it. And then it is possible that it's basically our saving grace from certain death. Because we are very low level, according to HP. It's like only around 1,000 HP or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've just incorporated into the story, probably.
Yeah. Or, as I said before, it's just for debug purposes that they went back because HP are low, but they just loaded up Odin into their arsenal and just deployed it for, I don't know.
Oh, that's true.
Just for the trailer. But everything else seems to fit very well into progression, so I don't know. Maybe you're right. It's an actual cutscene that happens before we get burned away by a snake. Yeah. And then we move forward and see another snake impaled, and then, did Sephiroth do this?
Yeah.
Then we see, we weren't able to kill it before. Odin had to help us out. And Sephiroth, just hung it up on this tree. No biggie.
Yeah, that would really show us how powerful Sephiroth is, right?
Or at least the Genova version, because it's Genova's body that's searching around.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But new players won't know that.
Yeah.
So, just briefly, there were two blog posts about Red 13 and Sephiroth's combat. I don't think we need to thoroughly analyze it or anything, just the basics. And Red 13 is interesting because he's a combination between defensive and offensive. So you have to block to charge up Vengeance mode when it's charged up. I don't think you have to wait before it's charged up completely, so you can deploy it when it's charged up maybe only a little bit, quarter or something, but it's then much as powerful, or it just runs out faster when you deploy it. But that's basically the gist of it. You block, Vengeance meter starts going up, and then you can press triangle to unlock Vengeance mode, which I think just makes him faster and stronger, and maybe even adds new ability for the duration, something like that. I don't quite remember. That's my bad. I should have read through it again today, but it's what I remember. And looks pretty cool. even his combat in general is very, very swift, and he just jumps and flips around and does a spinning attack when you press it or hold down square. It's just kind of like a saw blade.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So it flies around the enemies. It's really cool. And Sephiroth has something like, I don't even know how it's called, but you can charge up his triangle attack or charge up the level of his triangle attack by just continually slashing at the enemy. Like the longer the slashing combo, the higher the triangle level. And there are different names for each, I think. Oh, I forget the names, but there are at least three of them. It's kind of like Tifa's Whirlwind Uppercut, and then Omni Strike, and then the other one,
yeah,
Rise and Fall, I think it is. But she has to charge it up with an ATB ability. But Sephiroth just can continually slash at the enemy and basically do a combo, and then it rises up in ranks, and then you can press triangle to deploy it. So the more you combo, the stronger attacks you get. Which looks pretty cool. And according to those who played as Sephiroth, it really feels powerful to play. So you feel how powerful he really is.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a concern of mine as soon as I read, oh, you can control Sephiroth. Oh, no. Because it will kind of diminish the mystery about him. When you can play as Sephiroth, you feel how strong or weak he is, but apparently he feels very, very strong and fast. So I think it works out. We'll see when we get our hands on the game.
Yeah, I'm very excited about controllable Sephiroth when we heard about that. But then there was conflicting information where somebody thought that it was just going to be AI controls.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But then they actually came out with the gameplay demo after, pretty soon after. So,
and it can switch to him and just deploy stuff. Yeah,
you can switch And he does look very powerful.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited to play as him for a bit during that section of the game.
Oh, for sure.
And I think it's cool that they included it. Like, they actually made him controllable and not just an AI character.
I'm impressed that they gave it so much thought and made him so involved in the battle for just this short segment, actually. It's just Mount Nebel, nothing else. Oh, maybe the dragon, if it's still there while they're driving to Nibelheim. Maybe that's there too. But still, it's not for a long time, and you still can completely control him.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike certain other characters we will not be able to control in this game. Weird.
So maybe there's part of it that we're not seeing, or do you think that what we saw for the flashback sequence was everything that there is in the gameplay demo?
Not quite, because it starts at the Mako Spring, and there is gameplay before that. Although is it just a cutscene when they walk towards the rope bridge and then it snaps and afterwards gameplay starts? I don't quite remember, but it is possible that we were actually able to play right after exiting Nibelheim. Well, we can. We saw it in the very first teaser trailer. They're walking towards Mount Nibel.
Yeah.
So, but it's possible that there are no enemies there. So who knows?
Well, it just seems weird. Why would they do that? Like, program all that for such a short time and use it once? I don't know.
Well, who knows? But they implemented so many things that so many players just can't skip because it's optional. But they did it anyway. all those mini games, even this new mini game and all the Moogle House and all those things, you can miss if you want to. But they made it so involved anyway, so extensive, let's say. Expansive and extensive.
Well, I'm also very excited about Kate Sith.
Oh,
and we
got
clarification on the pronunciation, by the way. Just wanted to say that they confirmed
it's Kate
how to
Sith.
Say it.
I and a few others are miffed. A few, I think a lot of others, according to the crap storm that happened afterwards, are miffed about them not using the original Gaelic pronunciation, because apparently Gaelic is... That's something I don't quite know. I haven't looked too much into it, but I watched Max Dude's 20-minute video about it, about all these things that he just also didn't know, and basically was very insensitive. I thought, well, this is how it's written, this is how it's pronounced, this it was clear from the start, blah, blah, blah. And then all the others came out of the woodwork, said, no, it's a dead language, it's disrespectful and stuff like that. And okay, simmer down, folks. But I understand that it's contentious for those who are involved or invested in the survival of this apparently dying language, the Gaelic language in Ireland and Scotland. So right. it is also a cultural problem. And the Japanese original does uphold the actual pronunciation, ketoshi. So ketoshi is pronounced right. there. So, but I think for the English audience, because most have no idea about its Gaelic origins and would be confused that it's pronounced that way. I think it's mostly for that reason that they went with Cate Sith, because it's how everybody would pronounce it anyway.
That's what I was going to say. Like us being kids, like, did you not call him Cate Sith?
Yeah, exactly.
I did when I was growing up. I didn't even know it was called Mako. I was thought it was called Mako. Yeah. So I called it Mako. Like,
Titus,
like there's no voice tracks. So like, how do you...
Yeah.
There were no voices. So like, you just read text and then you say it in your mind. And that's what I said growing up. So
even with other characters, Yuffie, Yuffie, Tifa, Tifa. Yeah. There are so many others.
And Aerith, but there was a mistranslation because it was Aerith.
Oh, Aerith, yeah.
Was the translation. So I called her Aerith for a long time.
Yeah, same. And it's in German, it's still Aerith. And I think in French too, in other languages. Mm-hmm. Because we do not really have the th sound. That the
exactly.
th sound, the lisp.
Yeah.
So that's probably why. But in English, it works. And it was meant to be pronounced that way because it's similar to Earth. So,
yep.
Yeah, pronunciation is always an issue. See, Titus, Titus debate and all that thing. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just happy that we got to see gameplay footage. So he looks pretty interesting to control. And it looks like there's a triangle ability that just when you cast it, the Moogle just shows up.
Yeah, it's
it doesn't look like we're getting separate, like we're not getting separate HP pools or anything like that. We're just getting... like attacking together or attacking separately.
Yeah.
But it does look like you can do fast, quick succession, high damage critical strikes when you're by yourself. And then on the Moogle, it looks like it's combined damage.
Yeah, probably also higher damage, but slower maybe.
Higher damage, but it's not critical strikes. Yeah. It's just regular damage. See. Yeah.
It's...
Which is what we were kind of talking about on the episode when we were kind of trying to come up with.
Yeah.
For the combat, which is pretty cool.
I'm glad that mount and dismount is a thing, which I predicted. Probably not me alone, but it's something I thought this would be the case.
And yeah, I'm interested to see if we're going to get like those crazy things that I was talking about where you have to decide. It's like a buff or a debuff or it hurts your party or whatever. Like the original where you just like throw an object out, like a box or something. Mm. And then we didn't really see too much actually combat. We just
barely saw anything.
A little bit. And then a synergy attack, I think, with Aerith.
That was that's so cute. Aerith feeds the Moogle her magic balls. It gobbles it up and then just shoots a big laser at the enemy. It's so cool.
Yeah, I like that. That was awesome. Yeah, and I'm really happy.
Yeah, and Aerith stands there. She just puts her staff behind her and looks at the Moogle. Eat up, Buttercup, basically. And it's so cool. It's great.
Yeah. I'm just really happy that we're getting Kate's controllable gameplay.
Definitely.
And people focused a lot on the fact that we're not getting Vincent and Cid controllable. And I'm like, guys, we're still getting Sephiroth. We're getting Red 13. We're getting Yuffie again, but it's going to be improved. And I know that we had episode intermission. Plus, we're getting Cate Sith.
Yes.
So we're going to be fine. You know, we're going to be fine. And the other two are guest characters. I mean, they're going to be like AI characters, kind of like what Red 13 was. So I'm a little bit disappointed about Vincent, but... I can understand why they're waiting for the next one.
Yeah.
You know, because we're getting two characters now and then two later. I mean, Sephiroth, do you include him? Like as being controllable? He's not a main party member. So we're getting two in this game and then two in the next game.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Right?
Makes sense because otherwise there would be nothing really new in the next game.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Yeah. So anything else you want to add for combat? Before we go on to the next part?
I don't think so. I'm probably forgetting a lot, but there's just too much to talk about, and we could go on and on.
Yeah.
Just one last thing. Cate Sith's Moogle is just so perfectly fluffy and bouncy and fat and wobbly, and I love it.
Yeah, same. I love the design.
It's perfect.
I think it looks awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited. All right, guys, moving on here. So we're talking about the minigames that were unveiled, I guess, and there's some new minigames. And also, it looks like we're getting pretty much almost all of the previous minigames that were in the Gold Saucer. Kind of, we don't know yet, but so the new minigame that we're getting is called Queen's Blood, which was specifically created for Rebirth. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Queen's Blood, Viz?
Oh yeah. This is the first thing I opted to cover in an analysis article. It's already live. It's actually a really large minigames article that's not finished yet, but I wanted to publish it and still keep all the minigames in one article to keep everything in place, not scattered across multiple articles. So there are still a few missing, but Queen's Blood is the one that I created first and then published. And it's probably also the largest section because it could have story relevance, but more on that in the mystery section, probably. So Queen's Blood, it's new, it feels medieval, it's a card game, and I always love card games, especially those where I can collect cards, and it's really good. So I was able to reconstruct the whole rule set based on those few scenes we got and the screenshot.
Whoa.
I'll try to keep it brief because it's quite involved, but there are three rows of five. So for both opponents, of course, we start on the left and the enemy starts on the right. And there are those pawn-like pieces on empty fields. And we also have those pawn icons on the cards. Some have one, some have two, which means a card with two pawns needs a field where there are two pawns already on it for you to place it there. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So for example, the Moo card has two of those, and you need to make sure that a field has two or more of those pawn pieces so you can place the card there. Some have one, and those you can place from the beginning because on each opponent's side, the first row has already single pawns on them. So you can place your single pawn cards on any of the left row, or the enemy can do so on the right row, right column. And any time you place a card, it will spawn more pawns in those fields that are designated or shown on the card itself. So there's a 5x5 grid on each card. In the center is the card position in white. And in yellow, there are other fields filled in. And those are the fields that receive an additional pawn upon placing the card. So for example, if the Shinra Security Officer card has one yellow field in each direction, so top, bottom, left, and right. So when you place it in those fields to the bottom, above, and to the right and left, will receive an additional pawn. So for example, if you place it in the middle, the top and the bottom receive one each, so they have now two. And in those fields, you can then place cards which require two pawns. That's basically how it works. So you need to slowly make your way to the right and make sure you occupy more spaces than your opponent. But that's only one thing. Each card has also a value. One, two, three, or even four. I've seen at the Elephadunk card has a value of four. When you place a card, that row increases its value by the value of the card. So you have those numbers on the right, on the left, on your side, and the enemy has numbers on the right, and those are zero by default. So when you place your first card with a value of one, that row increases by one on your side. When your enemy places one a card with, let's say, a value of two, the row on the enemy's side increases by two. So I'm pretty sure you need to have a total value of or your total value of all the rows needs to supersede the value that your enemy has. So the more fields you occupy, the higher the chance you have a higher value than the opponent does. Cool. And each time you place a card and the row value increases, an equal amount of chips fall into that space. So when you place a card with a value of two chips fall down. And maybe you remember there's a dragon statue on either side holding a bowl. And it's possible that when one row is filled with cards, no card can be placed anymore. Those chips within this inlet field on the left and right will then place into the bowl. And at the end of the game, the player with the the most amount of chips in the bowl wins. That's my prediction anyway. There's a little bit more to it, like there are cards with abilities, but that's, I think, too much for now.
That's okay. Yeah.
So if you have questions, fire away.
Well, what do you think about this as a mini game? Like, do you think that it's a good addition? Like, I know that it's new. Like, what do you think? Do you think that, like, you're going to enjoy playing this? It looks pretty cool to me. I hope that people enjoy playing it and don't skip it.
Oh, I hope so,
but
too.
But I feel like for some people might find it complex. Like, they might not even enjoy doing it. You know what I mean?
Well, of course.
I just want everybody to play it. And
There's always the risk, but it seems to be easy to learn. Like, there are not that many rules. Maybe I explained it a little bit too complex, but without visuals, it's hard anyway. But when you have a visual representation and a short explanation how the rules work, it's very easy actually to just go into it. But then you have to build your strategy. You have to find out how to best build not just your deck, but also how to advance from your side towards the enemy so that you have enough chips in the dragon's bowl or the higher value. Because it's not just the amount of cards you place, because you take turns. You have mostly the similar amount of cards on the field, but different amounts of cards on each row. And when there's different values and you only place like value ones and twos, you might lose because the enemy was able to place cards with a value three or even four. So he wins out. But as I mentioned before, there are certain abilities on cards, and there's the Mew card has an ability that increases the value of the card below it, so in the row below it, by one. So if you place the Mew in the bottom row, the ability is lost. So you should place it in the middle or the top row, and preferably above a card that's owned by you, so that the value is increased by one. Such strategies need to be thought through by deck building and while playing. And I think it's just a classical case of easy to learn, hard to master. And I also saw that there are multiple levels of opponents. So in Calm, there are two opponents, both level one, as you see in the icons on the compass above. Basically the same as in Fort Condor in Intermission. There were, I think, level one, two, three, and then I think Chandler was level four, or others also level four, I don't remember. But different levels. And since we're dealing with the whole world, I can see many, many levels of opponents. Yeah. And you have to beat a certain amount of level ones to then move on to level two and stuff like that. And it opens up much more.
So do you think you collect cards?
Yes.
Like when you beat the opponent, you get a card and then you add it to your deck and then you can
change up your deck. That's one possibility. Or you can dig up cards with a chocobo search, digging out of the ground or buy them. Exactly. Or receive them as a reward from alt jobs, or find them in treasure chests, or what have you.
What about steal them?
Oh, yeah, steal them from enemies. yes, that's a good one. Or even receive it. Like you beat this Mithril Golem, this new monster they've shown in the trailer, and then you get its card, like boss cards. This could be it, yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Or
I think it's going to be awesome.
There's also Morph. The morph material is in the game. This means we might be able to morph creatures or enemies into cards too.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. But oh my God, that's a lot.
It is. But that's not all. There's also a side story attached to this mini game. So the more you play, the more you learn about this mysterious side story that culminates when you're probably beating the last opponent, the strongest one. Kind of like when you beat Chadley, it tells you why Fort Condor even exists and what he wanted to do with that. So this is something to look forward to. It's not just you get new cards and beat your opponents, you also receive more story, which is always cool.
Yeah, I think it looks awesome. I can't wait to play it. I'm just going to spend so many hours playing these minigames.
Yeah. Yep.
Like when I played Red Dead, they had like poker and different card games. I just spent like playthroughs just playing those, like just literally booting it up.
Yep.
And playing a game of poker and just doing that. Like that's it. Like not even actually doing anything like in the game.
Same.
But that was enjoyable for me.
Oh, yeah.
Like I actually really enjoyed that.
Oh,
and that was my play session for like 3 hours of poker. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a break now. But yeah. I just really loved it, like, a lot. So I can see myself kind of getting into this. Even with Gwent, like, in Witcher 3, like, I really enjoyed playing it.
Yeah.
I played it a lot, and I think I got all the cards for that. And then they released it as a standalone.
True, yeah.
But I had already played it in the game, so I didn't really play it afterwards. But I really enjoyed it. So
yeah, that was Final Fantasy VIII for me with Triple Triad. I loved the game.
Oh right, I was gonna say.
Kept playing and playing, stealing all the cards and winning all the cards, and even created my own physical representation.
Some people loved that, but some people hated that too.
Yeah.
Triple Triad, some people did not like it.
I think the main issue were the rules, how you had to make sure that the rules didn't screw you over.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. But
me too, but it was really a little bit of an issue to sometimes make sure that the rules you didn't like got weeded out and the rules you did like got spread around. You had to know what you're doing and talk with the Queen of Cards and
Pay
her even, I don't remember. But the game itself, it's awesome. It's really simple, but you need to know what you're doing. And the more rules are in place, like with same and some and wall same and stuff like that, it gets crazy. But it's fun. Interesting. It's really fun. And that's what I hope for Queen's Blood, that it's, since it's not that complicated, but still involved and deep, that it
becomes something rewarding.
Yeah. That's
what I want.
Yeah, that people really love it and play it all the way through. And maybe they even sell a physical game, because it would work. It does look like a game that could exist. So
yeah, even like a mobile version or something.
Oh, sure,
like that.
For sure, yeah. Like a separate one.
An app, like game, yeah. And they are coming out with a remake board game. I saw that as well, that you can buy.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I think.
But... What does it entail? Like, what do you play there?
I don't know. It's a board game. I don't know.
Huh.
I'm not sure. But I saw an ad for it.
Oh, I see.
I think it's only in Japan right now.
Yeah, of course it is only in Japan. Oh, boy.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited for Queen's Blood. I hope it's just rewarding. That's why I play them the most, is that I want to beat it because I want to get the item or, you know, the materia or whatever it is, like the payoff in the end, playing at them. I mean, I just enjoy playing them as is, and did that anyway, like I said before. But it's nice when it's rewarding, so you have something to work towards, you know. So, for example, that stupid box mini game.
Yep.
In intermission, and I beat it eventually after weeks. Oh, actually, I think that's why I didn't even finish intermission, because you were done.
Oh,
and I
was right.
Like, I am not letting this game beat me, this stupid box mini game. I'm like, I am doing it and I'm beating it, and then I will finish this. And I did beat it, but the reward was not worth the headache and just
what was it?
Anxiety and stress of like doing it perfectly.
Yeah. What was it again? Just skill plus EXP plus or something?
Yeah, it was like EXP plus. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't care, but I'm still getting it anyway. So.
Yeah.
But I just don't want it to turn into that, where that was so annoying, man.
Oh, yeah. No.
But you're not combat. Like, you're not using the character and using the combat system to, like, do the minigame. It's a specific, separate system.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And that's what I like about those minigames. They have their own game rules and... just aspects to it. That's why there are mini games and not just challenges, basically. Which Whack-a-Box could be considered a mini game, but it uses the normal game mechanics just in a different way. So it's kind of more like a battle challenge, kind of. I don't know.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you're right.
But technically, it is a mini game because it has its own rules with the scoring system and stuff. But it's borderline not.
but
Queen's Blood, really looking forward to it, and it's a new mini game, which is also always good, and I love card mini games. And in Trails of Cold Steel 3, I'm still in the beginning, but I learned that there is also a card mini game in there with collectible cards, and it's kind of like a discount Magic. It reminds me of Magic, but it's a bit different. But it's really good. It's cool. I just one match so far and I love it already. It's really cool. I may be able to tell you about it later, but it's really good.
Yeah.
That's why also looking forward to Queen's Blood. It will captivate me for sure.
I'm interested to see what you have to say about the story and mysteries about the Queen's Blood. Stay tuned for our next episode, yep. Y'all.
Yep. Or just read the article if you want.
Yeah.
It is ccobservatory.substack.com, and then you see all the articles published so far, and you can just dig in if you want.
Nice.
Okay.
I'm on my way there right now. No.
Yeah. And please subscribe so you get an email when new article is up and get notified immediately. And maybe even when I post a note, because I post a note on there when there is an update to an article too. So I think you get notified then as well. Anyway, we're drifting off again. We need to talk about the other mini games. Because there are other mini games, 8 more. And I'm pretty sure those are not all the mini games included in Rebirth. And I'm hoping for snowboarding. I really hope for snowboarding.
Yeah, same.
But it hasn't been shown off yet, because I'm pretty sure they do not want to reveal the latter third of the game yet. They haven't shown anything of the northern continent yet, because that's a story spoiler, which I commend them for. There's things I have to say about that, but that's for the mystery section and or the story and scope, because we do not want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But the welcoming ceremony march. Some people thought, well, this is so silly and it doesn't quite work in the original anyways. It's broken. Why would they do this? And they did it, and it's awesome and it's cool. Because Cloud does not just fall in line and has to move his rifle up and down in unison with the others. He is leading the troops. He is leading the march, which is pretty cool, actually. And when you see it in the trailer, in the screenshot, there's, I think, L2, the button you can press to change formations. Mm-hmm. And according to interviews, Cloud has to first collect all the soldiers before the minigame starts. And depending on which ones you collect, formations are different and the difficulty is different. And I think certain scenes even. So it could be very interesting and more involved than we thought. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, some people were just saying that in the original they tried to sneak, so now like Cloud's just leading them.
Yeah.
Which was kind of like...
Yeah, he's in the front leading.
He's just out in the open. Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah, but he nobody knows him, basically. And he is not wanted. This is something for later, but he is not wanted. So people do not know him, basically.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
He and Red 13 are not wanted. Only the others.
Nice catch.
So, and Red 13... I want to see him in a Shinra uniform so bad.
I do. I wonder what they're going to do.
Either they just go through with it and just pretend it's normal, basically, or they try it and it looks so ridiculous and doesn't work, and Red just says, well, screw this, I'm not doing it. And just maybe he gets another more dog-like harness or something, so he gets through as a Shinra dog, like a guard dog or something. Maybe they attach, or maybe they have those weird tentacles. Maybe they just like create or have a certain harness that kind of makes him look like one of those guard dogs. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
Who knows? There's so many things they can do. But I really hope they embrace it, because Red on a chocobo is a thing. He does ride a chocobo.
Yeah, that's what I was
like
gonna say.
Others.
I'm like they put him on a chocobo, so
they are not shying away from all those silliness.
Yeah, which looks awesome, by the way. I love it.
And did you notice he holds his tail straight up, that he doesn't burn chocobo.
Such a good detail. He's also got those little string things.
Yeah,
he holds the bridle.
Yeah,
I think he's holding it in his paw or like between his toes.
Kind of, yeah, somewhat, like yeah.
It's too pixelated to like really see up close, but I love it so much.
Yeah, somebody recorded footage of him from the side so that you actually can see him really riding, and it just bounces up and down a bit. It looks so silly. So
I think it's
place.
Great.
It's so cool. It's really cool. Yeah, and there's chocobo racing, as mentioned before, and the chocobo gear apparently affects stats, which is really, really cool.
I love it.
And chocobo racing is not as cheap as it was before. First, it has more tracks. Second, there are more involved mechanics regarding speed. So you have the normal speed, which you can accelerate and decelerate with buttons. I think R1 and R2 or something, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have those blue fruit balloons you can collect, which increases your speed too. So there's a number in the hut that goes up, and then it increases basically your max speed. And there are yellow fruits you can consume. There are, I think, two available, and you consume one, and then you get a speed boost for a short amount of time. And then there's also the red fruit with an attached gauge, and I forget which button it is. I think it is L1. As long as you have it pressed, or maybe you press it and then you just engage in another speed boost, and it even shows the haste spell effect around the chocobo, like this spinning gear. Then it just consumes the bar, and when the bar is empty, it probably needs to just slowly charge up again, and then you can press it at any time to gain the speed again. But when you press it before it's full, mm-hmm. you have speed for a short amount of time, of course. So you need to make sure you use it when you need to, so you don't wait too long, because then you don't make use of it, really. But if you don't wait enough, you don't have enough speed to make it past the line or something. So it's very cool. So you have this bar that refills, you have the two consumable speed boosts, and then you have the general max speed that increases each time you run through one of those blue balloons. And you can drift. You can also drift, this which is pretty nice.
Yeah, I love that.
So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's giving me like Chocobo Racing, like the game for the Switch.
Oh, right. Yeah. I haven't played it, so
just
I don't...
like the menu and the colors and stuff like that.
Could be that they took over some mechanics from them, because
assets
I
or something.
Know. Yeah,
yeah.
And something I did not expect: they recreated the 3D battler, which is basically just a random luck. Because the thing is, in the original game, you press either high, mid, or low, and when you press the attack, the enemy counters. But the thing is, it doesn't really matter which one you choose. It's always a fixed amount of, or a fixed chance that you hit or the enemy hits. And this chance is very high during the first round, against the first opponent. After you hit him 10 times, he goes down, then the next appears. But then the chance of you landing a hit is lower. So the chance of you winning is also lower. And then you maybe win. Then the third one comes around. The chance is really low. And if you're really lucky, you get past it. And then the fourth one is unbeatable. Chance is so low. And I think it's even just zero. It's so low that it's impossible to beat. But when you make it past the third one, you get 300 GP, which is quite high, actually.
Yeah.
But since I think it's around 3.5% or something to actually beat him. So it's... yeah, it's totally silly. It's a rock, paper, scissor game, but it doesn't matter because it's purely based on luck and not actually what you choose. Or it would make sense if the opponent had a certain AI. So it's either completely random, and then, okay, yeah, it's random. Or the enemy always does, or your opponent always performs the same move you did before. So if you if you realize that, you can anticipate the next move. So you can basically cycle through high, mid, low, high, mid, low when you know how this rock, paper, scissors works, and then you can easily beat it. That would be cool. But since you earn GP, you could easily grind it out as soon as you know how to beat it, and it's too easy. So they made it just RNG, probably. I don't know. It's weird. It's not that good of a game in the original. But in Rebirth, it looks really good. So you have the ATB gauge. When it's full, you can either throw a left or a right hook. When it's the enemy's turn, when the enemy has full ATB, the enemy attacks, and you have to look at its animation to see, to decide whether to dodge to the left or the right.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the trailer, you see it, Cloud was able to dodge away, which is pretty cool. And each time you hit, your limit break bar fills by 20%. So after 5 hits, you can deploy a limit break, probably without having to spend ATB. So just press, what was it? L3 and R3, I think it is. And then, it looks much more interesting and more skill-based, but still not easy. Because it's possible that there are more difficult enemies that maybe punch twice when their ATB is full, or their ATB fills faster than you, so you have to dodge more, or it's different or more difficult to tell which side they're attacking on, or they faint with right and then throw a left hook or something like that. I could see that happening to mix things up. So
it looks really cool. I played this one in the original. I think I failed a lot. Yep. And then I stopped. But then later on, when I replayed it again, like there was more of those guides like on the internet.
I see, yeah.
So I think I just found one of those.
Yep.
Like game FAQs or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That
exactly. Website? There are a lot of guides.
It was
there.
Like a text. It was like a text game guide.
Yep.
Basically,
yep.
Just in text with no pictures.
Although,
so I think I read that like how to do it. I don't know.
Although
how,
now,
but I remember beating it.
Yeah. Well, beating at least the third one, you can if you want. If you try enough, you can beat the third one. But the fourth one is literally impossible.
So, yeah, I think I beat the third one. You're right.
Yeah.
And that you get 300 GP.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I remember using that to cash it in because isn't there a weapon that you can buy? Or there's something
there are many,
that you need to get?
There are many, a few items, I think, rare items, and two exclusive materia in the Wonder Square, which you can buy with the GP. Yeah.
I think that's what I did, was I bought the materia with it.
And I think you also need GP to enter the Battle Square, need to enter Chocobo races. So I think the Wonder Square is the only part where you can purchase or spend gil to then earn GP from the minigames. Everything else needs GP. Even spending the night at the inn costs like 10 GP or something. Or you just go out and in the entrance and hope that the black marketeer outside safe point appears, and then you can buy GP.
Yeah, that's what I would do, is like go in and out, in and out till they appeared.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
And even the save point needs GP, like 5 or something. So it's egregious. Yeah. Let's see how they recreate all this GP stuff in the Gold Sauce. I'm pretty sure they stay faithful because it works. It makes sense that you cannot just buy
Well, they want you to play the games to get GP.
All the attractions and stuff, yeah. Okay. Next is G-Bike. Of course, it's there because it was there in the original as well. And it was in Rebirth. Two, of course, one more, like in chapter 4 and chapter 18, played it. And it's in essence the same, but not quite, because I didn't see the Shinra Hall Essays 37 in there, like where Barrett and the others are sitting on an inn drive.
Oh, right.
So it seems that you do not need to protect them. Maybe maybe they just recorded the trailer in a way that you don't see it. Which would be weird.
Maybe.
But I just didn't see it there. And interestingly, when you defeat enemies, you do not get points. Maybe you need to defeat a wave and then you get points, depending on your performance during that wave. That's something I can see. There's also a nitrous boost. So you can collect those golden tokens and then you get a boost charge. You can hold 3 at a time. So you can just boost ahead. What it actually means in gameplay, like for what it's meant to be, I'm not quite sure. Maybe you can just speed away, or sometimes the others are also too fast, so you cannot quite reach everybody, so you boost it and you can get ahead and attack the ones further up ahead or something, or just that you reach the end faster. It's hard to say because there are a few variables that are still missing. And what is also missing is the long range attack, so the spinning blow is still there, so his spinning attack, but the L1 button indicator is missing. So either they completely removed it, or it's not there in certain levels, or they just disabled it for the trailer. Who knows? But it seems like they made away with it, maybe because it's too strong or something. But that is unfortunately missing. But since there's basically no life bar needed, and it's a minigame and you do not need to survive, there's maybe it's also a life bar, but it seemed there's a gauge at the bottom right, which has a G in front of it. So basically G fuel, because it seems like it is fuel. When you watch the trailer, you see it slowly decrease. So it could be that it's actually fuel, and when it's down and you weren't able to collect all those G tokens on the way, which refill that gauge, you might either lose or stop or something. You probably lose because you cannot drive anymore. So you need to make sure that the fuel is always not empty. So basically you need to collect all those string of G tokens, as we see in the trailer. Yeah, it could be interesting. There's also the indicator up top, so you know how much left of the whole track there is. There's a speed indicator so you know how fast you go, which might be beneficial for you to know how fast you go and give you an indication of how to conduct yourself during that minigame to make the most of it. So this is also something I haven't been able to deduct everything out of it, but it's something I'm really looking forward to how it plays, how it feels like. So what do you think about this G-Bike thing?
Same, yeah. Well, I think it's a nice callback to the original. I don't know if I was expecting it to be in remake graphics, though, like actual character models.
Oh,
I don't know why.
Yeah, they missed opportunity there to also have it in pixel graphics like the 3D Battler. Yeah, that's true.
I was just kind of like, oh, it's just like the freeway getaway scene, basically, but it's been redone.
Yep.
A little bit, like changed a bit. So I don't know.
Yes.
I was just, it's not that I would want it in the other way. I guess it's just the fact that it's, like, everything that we experienced in the old game was in pixel, like, polygonal, like, figures. So I didn't realize that that's probably what they wanted was to have it in real life. And that's the only graphics they could make for it. So
it looked the same because they couldn't do it otherwise. Like, with the G-Bike, with
they couldn't change it. Yeah.
It was just the graphics at the time, so it looked the same. Actually, it's the same with the 3D Battler. Cloud looks the same in the original game as it does. It's basically just the field model. So them opting to recreate the 3D Battler in polygonal graphics is actually a cool move because it's a cool callback to how it looked back then, but it's also kind of representing just a silly boxing game. But the G-Bike is actually a representation of what we went through earlier in Remake.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. But when you're going to the station to like at Gold Saucer to do it, like, is it like an arcade box, that you just go up to and it's like a machine, but then the machine has you as a real life model inside of it. So somebody programmed you, or like you were saying, maybe they filmed it or it's VR. I don't know.
Yeah,
I feel like it would have been easier to explain that if they just used, because it's like, oh, it's like a machine that has polygonal graphics, but you are playing as, it uses you as the character model inside of the game, but it's not real because there's disconnect there because it's a game. It's a game machine, not like a...
Yeah. It could be that it's just a macro scanning like they do in the Cosmo Theater.
Oh,
like they scan themselves, the machine scans the party so that they can be projected into the space and stuff like that. So it's... Maybe it's something like that, or just suspension of disbelief because it's a game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm excited for this. Mm. I think it looks cool. I like the systems that they kept, because honestly, doing that in Remake was, for me, it was the initial time, but then I lost a bunch, so then it was just annoying.
Yeah.
Like, it annoyed me. And then it did give me the option to skip it, and I did skip
it. Yeah.
I think on the second playthrough, when I played on hard mode, I did skip it because I was like, I don't really want to do this.
Yeah, same, because it's just the same and it takes too long.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
The first time it's really great, it's suspenseful and stuff, but the second time when you just want to go through it, it takes so long to kill all those enemies.
Or in chapter select, like you're like, oh, I got to get this, but you have to go through it in chapter select.
Exactly.
You know, I'm like, no, I'm skipping this. Yep. But yeah, I like it. This version of it, I think, will be more fun than just going through it in Remake, like,
for sure,
story of it.
There are also much more enemies, so that I haven't counted them, but at least half a dozen on screen at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your spinning attack makes actual sense when you manage to get a lot of them huddled together, and then you can just spin them all away. Also, one thing I forgot is there seem to be milestones, like basically checkpoints, which provide points. Because in the trailer and the screenshot, you see two signs on each side of the freeway with a 1,000 number on it. So it's possible that each time you pass one of those, you get rewarded with points, like maybe how much you disposed of, how many enemies you dispatched, how many times you got hit. And then it calculates a number that gets added plus the 1,000 for reaching the checkpoint. That's what I believe, but we'll see how it actually turns out.
And it's the highest amount of points that you have determines how much GP you get in the end?
Maybe, yeah. In the original game, it was if you got below 5,000 points, you received 2 GP, I think. None. I think 5,000 and up is 2 GP. Then 10,000 and up is 10. And below 5,000, just none, I guess. No GP.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure it provides you with a GP according to... Oh, no.
Yeah,
I forgot.
Points.
There's something else, that there are multiple target scores, like in the Whack-A-Box minigames. Like you see 18,000, okay. It has a check mark, so you have, at least in the past, made that target score. And then the next one is 22,000. Although in the trailer, the score is only around like 16,100 or something. And it's possible that you might only be able to gain GP once. Like every time you reach a new high score. That is like a new target score.
Oh,
that
I
is
see.
Possible. Or maybe you get GP every time, but an additional reward for meeting a target score for the first time, like with the Whack-A-Box minigame. I think you receive Moogle coins every time you play it in Sector 5, but the rewards, like the items and accessories and stuff, you get only once when reaching target
once,
score.
Yeah.
I think
and
it
then
would...
you can use the coins to buy stuff.
Exactly.
From,
and in Gold Saucer, you need GP to buy stuff. So, yeah. I guess the additional reward is once and GPs every time, probably probably calculated according to your score. Maybe just your score divided by 1,000, and when you reach 20,000 is 20 GP. Who knows? Maybe one last thing. It's interesting that above the track in the sky, you see the same square and octagon tessellation pattern you can also see on enemy shields when they're up. Like the guard scorpion, when he puts up his shield, it's the same pattern there. And this pattern is based on this memory DNA pattern that has been first introduced in Advent Children. Like when the credits appear, you see this pattern appear. It's been in Crisis Core a little bit, in Crisis Core Reunion all over the place. So please read the article where I delve more into this pattern, because it's too much to go into it now. But I just wanted to mention it so that people know about it. Yeah, Catch Chocobo, we talked about it already, so we don't need to go over that anymore. Then there's Moogle Mischief. We don't know much about it, but we've seen in the Tokyo Game Show trailer. It seems like when we approach the Moogle House, talk with Moogle there, we get transported into this Moogle world, and we need to collect those 5 mischievous Moogle kids and put them back into their mock stools. And I think because it is a shop, according to the Japanese subtitles, it's a Moogle shop. So we might need to collect the kids first to unlock the Moogle shop so that we can then buy exclusive items using Moogle coins, because Moogle coins are still there. I think it was in Max's footage that when he went through the item menu that you see next to the Chocobo feathers or plumes that you collect to buy Chocobo gear, there's also the Moogle coin, which you need to... which you can spend at Moogle Emporiums, which might be just the Moogle house and the Moogle there. So yeah, and this is actually the next minigame I want to analyze. Already analyzed it a bit, but I still need to write down the part in the article for it. But basically, the Moogles just fly around and toss all those traps and fireworks and stuff at you, and you need to dodge. And when you get hit, you receive 1 Moogle pom-pom and are dazed for a few seconds. And are then also protected by a weird shield, so you probably cannot get hit like twice or three times in a row. And when you get hit again, you get the second Moogle pom-pom, and when you get hit the third time, I assume, because that was not in the trailer, you get a third pom-pom, you lose. That's my guess.
Oh, okay.
But each time you get hit, you get a Moogle pom-pom on the head, which is pretty silly, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, that's another one, which... just replaces the Moogle minigame or Mock House minigame in the original, where you have to feed Koopo, or not Koopo, Mock. I think he's just called Mock. You need to feed him the right amount of nuts to make him fly. And then you need to do the same thing again in front of his mate. When you can fly, then his mate loves him, and then they make children. And yeah. But here in Rebirth, they already have children. So the 5 children are already there.
Cool.
So it's basically, for me, it's a subtle confirmation that Remake Rebirth are a sequel of the original continuity, because they already have children. Now we need to put the children in place. Yeah, it's pretty nice. Also, there are a lot of Moogle stone statues around the Mughal house on the world map. So when you run past it, you see a few carved stone statues, Mughal faces. It's very cute.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, Chocobo Time Trial Tracks. This is the next one that's new. It was not in the original game, but in the trailer, I think it's also only in the TGS trailer, the short one. It seems like you can talk to Chocobo Billy outside of the ranch, and then you can just race the track, like from checkpoint mast to checkpoint mast or pole, and it's basically a time attack mode. It's as far as I can tell. You don't see much of it, but it's basically just run from pole to pole in a shortest amount of time and get to the goal in as fast as you can. And I think there are also, again, like with Whack-A-Box and G-Bike, you have certain target scores or target times you need to reach for a one-time reward. That's my guess, anyway. And last but not least, have you also seen it and you remember it from the original game?
The piano
yeah. Performance.
Well, is it when we play the piano at Tifa's house?
Yes.
And then don't we get a pair of her underwear?
No, that's in the... You can just check.
Oh, no, there's a note in the piano.
Yeah, there was a note in the piano. And I think the first time you get there... Oh, no, you find Tifa's savings in there, I think. Just a coin. But you need to do this so that when later on, when you return to Nibelheim, I think when after Cloud has gotten his true persona back, his true memories... And you can go back there and collect Tifa's final Heaven Limit Break. That was it. But you needed to play the main theme on the piano, mm-hmm. like it told you on the sheet. And then you find Tifa's savings, and that's the prerequisite for her final Limit Break later on. But now it's a full mini game, which might be introduced there first, or maybe not, because when that other comedian on stage played it live... He played it in a different, I think it was in a different area, right? The trailer showed Cloud playing in Tifa's room, but the gameplay mm-hmm. performance was in a larger hall on a grand piano.
And, I did not notice that.
And when you listen closely, you hear the Casa del Sol tune or track in the background playing. So it's probably in the villa or somewhere in Casa del Sol inside where it can also play the piano. So it's possible that we... Maybe it's even the first time we get to play it, but it's according to, how is it called again? Naoki, not Yoshida, that's the FF14-16 mm-hmm. guy. Naoki Hamaguchi, yeah, Hamaguchi-san. Yeah, we've been recording for a while, my brain gets all messed
yeah.
up. So I said that there are many, many tracks we can unlock, and in this nice. Performance, there were Tifa's and Aerith's theme already unlocked, and... It's possible that each location has a piano we can play and probably gives us another sheet. So each piano probably has a sheet music on there we can collect. Maybe you can collect them in other places too. I really, really hope we get to collect so, so many tunes, not just like 10 or so, maybe 30 or 40 tunes. All character themes, all town themes, even Sephiroth's One Winged Angel or something like that. Just go crazy with it.
Maybe this is just a system to replace the music jukebox thing that was in Remake.
Oh, right. Yeah, could be. Yeah, that is true.
Because you get the sheet music, then you play it, then you can unlock it. But like, I'm happy about that because those music things just blared out music and you could not turn them off.
Yeah, you could just turn it off. That is true. You could just... I think either stop or play a silent. No, the silence music was in FF16. You can also, one of the tracks was like the sound of silence. When you play it, it's just nothing. But in Remake, you can also stop too. You do not have to play a sound or a track.
Are you sure there's those like little megaphone things that was like next to the shopkeeper?
Oh, those two, yeah. That is
like you
true.
Couldn't turn those off.
Yes.
They just blared out music 24/7 and I couldn't even hear.
Yes.
And I was like, what's happening? Remember? And the voices were a little bit softer than the music, and I couldn't hear what
yeah.
they were saying.
You're right. Like those were distracting, but the jukeboxes themselves, you could turn them off.
Yeah, but it looks like I haven't seen any of those little megaphone things so far in any of the
I hope they are not there anymore, because they're a little bit distracting. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it looks fun. It looks fun to play. And
yes, it does. Yeah.
And there's also a freestyle mode, so you can basically play mm-hmm. whatever you want. And this is...
Yeah, people are just going to record themselves playing concertos and all these like crazy things yeah. and just like post it.
Yeah, just weird tunes of whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
try to figure out actual like classical composers and just put that in there.
Yeah, play Bach and Mozart.
Exactly,
and stuff.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
Beethoven.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can record it, like record your song.
Maybe. Well, you can record it.
I mean, you can video record. Yeah, but
your PS5 share feature, just mm-hmm. record it. Yeah, looking forward to that too. Looking forward to all the mini games. Mm-hmm. That's why I was talking about them so much, because I love them.
Yeah.
Also, a quick little addition. Do you think the CPR minigame will be there in some way?
Mm.
Because I say that because in the demo, we saw Yuffie being tossed away from danger by Mr. Dolphin, and then she just hits the ground and flops around like a doll, and it seems like she's out of it because she's also not taking part in the battle. So maybe Cloud needs to perform CPR on Yuffie, which is less bad than on a 12-year-old Priscilla.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true. Maybe. Hopefully. That would be cool.
It's in the original, it's just silly. It's nonsense. But they create a better system for it. So
yeah.
Maybe it's just
or
a
they
cutscene.
Can just do it and leave it as part of as part of the story. Yeah. Like it's not a mini game. Yeah. Same thing with the Mr. Dolphin trying to bonk you up to the upper part.
Although I can see them turning this into an actual minigame that makes sense, not just trying it forever and get lucky, or move not an inch and press X twice and then be up there.
Mm-hmm.
That was also a very silly mechanic, but they could turn it into something interesting, because Mr. Dolphin is now even involved in the battle a little bit. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. I love that cutscene.
Yes, it's so good.
The dolphin is just like slow motion turning and looking at Cloud. Yep.
And then at the end, Cloud emerges from the surface, so then the dolphin, and then the dolphin bumps Cloud's face a little bit. It's so cute.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So looking forward to that. On that note, I think we should take a break here and save the rest for the next episode, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that concludes today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation about all the different aspects that were released and revealed in the gameplay demo and the TGS news dump that we got about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So we'll be hopefully recording an episode in a few weeks here. We'll be diving into more about the characters that were introduced, and we'll be talking about as well the story and possible mysteries that potentially could reveal themselves throughout the story of Rebirth. So I hope you guys are excited for that. So stay tuned for that. If you guys have any questions at all, you can send us an email. It's thereunionpodcast@gmail.com. We do have a Discord server, and it's listed in the description of each episode that we post, and it's also in the description of our YouTube videos. We do have a Twitter account, or X, formerly known as Twitter. It's @reunion_podcast. We do have a Facebook page, it's Reunion Podcast, and on YouTube, we are The Reunion Podcast. Don't forget to like, sub, and subscribe, and also if you want to write us a 5-star review, if you feel so inclined, we'd honestly really appreciate that. And they do have reviews enabled now on Spotify, so you can give us a 5-star rating on there. Visit, do you want to go ahead and drop your socials for Cosmic Canon Observatory?
For sure. Main platform is, of course, YouTube, Cosmo Canyon Observatory. All the videos are there. Since my paradigm shift, I only write articles, but Dachdegger and Kudakuma are working on videos based on those articles already, so videos will still come out. That's not been cut off, but I'm focusing on the articles. And speaking of, those are published on Substack, which is ccobservatory.substack.com. Then you can, if you have an account, subscribe there. I think you don't even have to have an account. You can just put in your email and then get notified by email when a new article drops. Of course, we're also on Twitter, or X, as it's now known, @cc_observatory. And of course, we have a Discord, which is the link for which is on our YouTube page, on Twitter, and Substack. I don't really know if any link is there. I don't remember, but you'll find us for sure. Or just search for Cosmo Canyon Observatory on Discord. I think we're public, and you should find us there.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Viz, today for this episode. It was a lot of fun kind of just brainstorming with you and talking about this incredible game. And I'm just so excited for it to come out. I just can't wait to play it. I think it's going to be absolutely incredible from everything that we've seen so far. So
yeah, you're welcome. It was a joy to finally talk with you about this cool and awesome and expansive looking game and so many things to talk about. And we're already at almost 3 hours again for this episode. So we wanted to record shorter episodes last few times. I think we managed that. But now, since there's so much around, talking about 1 hour, it's not going to cut it. The next time will probably be another 3 hour episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Listen, we do what we have to do, right? Yeah. And there's work to be done, so.
Yep, for sure.
All right, guys. Well, this is Kai. I'm signing off. All the best.
I'm Vizu Azaf, Cosmocan Observatory. Thank you all for listening to us ramble on about for almost 3 hours. And catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.